when you realise how significant things are, often arrive a little bit too late to do anything about it. Post 1945, with the formation of NATO and the essential provision of peace across a continent that had previously been ravaging itself for centuries, should be something that we all want to furiously protect. But what if the President of the US doesn't?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a cabinet minister has defended the government's refusal to criticise America's intervention in Venezuela. Sir Keir Starmer's under pressure from some of his own MPs to oppose the capture of the ousted leader Nicolas Maduro. President Trump has reiterated overnight that the US is in charge of Venezuela and has ruled out a snap election. Speaking to LBC, the Health Secretary Wes Streeting says Sir Keir Starmer is actively trying to influence a challenging moment in global politics.
In recent days, and I've seen some of the strident criticism made of the United States action in Venezuela from colleagues who I enormously respect, and I appreciate people are saying, well, that criticism is more strident than what the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary said. Why is that? Well, that's because the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary are not commentators. They are world leaders, and they are choosing their words and their timing very carefully to try and influence things positively rather than detrimentally.
Talks are due to take place in Paris later between Ukraine's allies to discuss security guarantees in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The US is sending President Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner and the special envoy Steve Witkoff to the meeting. Cabinet ministers have been told that the government's focus is on the cost of living this year. At the first cabinet meeting of 2026, the Prime Minister said the UK is starting to turn the corner, but Sir Keir Starmer said that he wants to prove that politics can deliver by putting more money in people's pockets. The celebrity chef Tom Kerridge has told LBC that business rate hikes are unsustainable. A revaluation means many firms, including pubs, bars, and restaurants, are facing much higher bills from April. Mr. Kerridge says that his venues will see rises of more than 100%.
For my Butcher's Tap and Grill, which is a very small little pub boozer in the middle of Marlow, does burgers, fries, sport on the telly. It's not Michelin star. It's not generating huge revenues. The rates at the minute of £50,000 a year. That's going up to £124,000 a year.
Sir Keir Starmer told LBC yesterday that he is looking at further support for the sector. NHS England's announced that people will be able to use an online hospital from next year to speak to specialists. The service will be an option after a referral from a GP. Severe menopause and endometriosis are among the conditions that will also be prioritised. And it's understood Liam Rossignol has verbally agreed to become the new manager of Chelsea Football Club. Rossignol is currently the head coach of the French side Strasbourg. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 50 points at 10,055. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most through today. Some snow showers continuing for central and northern England and in the west of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. I don't know how much telly you watched over Christmas. I think I popped up, I haven't watched it yet, on one of the royal ones that Dimbleby did. I don't know whether it was the coronation or perhaps the passing of the late Queen, but they sometimes take clips from this programme as almost sort of punctuation marks in historic documentaries. I'm not bigging myself up at all. I'm just telling you, it's a fact. It's quite a useful context sometimes to see. What you'd have done, I suppose, at some point is have a newspaper headline in a still image. But because we've got all these blooming cameras in the studio these days, I have become the substitute for the newspaper front pages. So you'll often have a clip from this studio of a little bit of commentary. Not just the news headlines, of course, which aren't filmed, but a little bit of a discussion. Sometimes they might even include you. Seriously, every now and then you'll get a phone-in element included in a historic documentary. Historical. Historic? Anyway, documentary. You'll get a little bit of phone-in included. So you could be preserved for posterity beyond even the magic of the LBC app or Global Player. If you're sitting there thinking as your New Year's resolution, do you know what? I might give that idiot on the radio a ring this year. I might set him straight about something. Then you could claim your place in eternity, or at least digital eternity, and end up in a Jonathan Dimbleby documentary, as I think I did over Christmas, but I haven't double-checked yet. And I mention that because where are we today, do you think? Where are we? I mean, glance at some of the front pages. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. In fact, the days when the Guardian and the Daily Mail, and if I have a New Year's resolution, it's probably going to be to depend less upon newspapers to decide what to talk to you about. But what are we going to depend upon instead? But the days when the Daily Mail and the Guardian essentially have the same front page are days that should be probably, circled on the calendar. They are possibly the days upon which we are most likely to have brief clips of our conversations preserved for posterity by their inclusion in television documentaries, because it means that unlikely planets are aligning. The list of prior... Anyway, you understand what I'm saying. Greenland raid will finish NATO, Trump is warned. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. Exactly the same story. And what's interesting and notable is that they are couched in very similar terms. Normally, the Daily Mail would provide you with a bonkers analysis of a story, and the Guardian would normally give you the relatively sensible, not always, but usually, the relatively sensible analysis. So, for example, with regard to moves back towards the single market that God knows everybody with a brain acknowledges we need to do as a country. Yesterday you'd have seen the Guardian report, closer ties to EU single market preferable to customs union, PM says. Sober, evidence-based, factual, opinion-free. The Daily Mail reports the same story. Starmer's new Brexit betrayal as he plots return to a single market. So you see what I mean. Two headlines, same story. One is bonkers, one is relatively calm and sane. We sadly, in Brexit Britain, still inhabit the land of the bonkers. So when both headlines in both newspapers are similarly sober, you take a moment to reflect upon what that means. It means that there is an almost unanimous acknowledgement of the seriousness of the situation. Greenland raid will finish NATO, Trump is warned. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. And of course, the difference between Greenland and Venezuela is that the Desperate Contortionists, which coincidentally was the name of my first band, the Desperate Contortionists in the UK media and political establishment will not be able to pretend that there are reasons to forgive or overlook the obvious breaches of our moral universe, our post-war settlement and international law in Trump's actions in Venezuela. Nobody's going to be able to write articles claiming that this is very necessary because drug dealers are awful. Please don't mention the one that he released last year type articles. Or, of course, we don't need international law because the really bad people who break international law break international law. Therefore, the really good people who uphold international law should be breaking international law, as a columnist in the Times has attempted to do today. It means, and the reason I'm talking about documentaries and history is because what foothills are we in at the moment, do you think? And are we equipped, really, to process the possible profundity of the moment? You can see a headline, you can hear me say it. NATO will be finished. What does that do in your world? How many different perspectives can we conjure up together? What will they depend upon? I took some extraordinary calls yesterday. If I absolutely had to pick a favourite, it would probably be Michael in Greenwich, who spoke with authority and wisdom about the circumstances in which Donald Trump could annex Greenland, the United States could take over Greenland with, to quote Michael, without a single shot being fired. And the picture he painted was, well, it was horribly plausible. And I actually did a little bit of homework yesterday, and it did not become less plausible the more that I thought about it and the more that I looked at it, because everything will depend upon if and when Donald Trump starts boosting troop numbers on Greenland, in Greenland. Everything will depend upon whether or not the rest of the world does anything to push him back. That is the moment we are in. It is, again, one of those days where I find myself wondering whether the hyperbole alarms that many of us have in our heads should be switched off for a while. The hyperbole alarm is the one that starts beeping when you worry that you are exaggerating the seriousness of the situation or exaggerating or over-egging, if you like, the political pudding. And there's a little voice that sort of says, yeah, wind your neck in, mate. Or you hear the late Michael Winner intoning, calm down, dear. And you find yourself thinking, well, a bit like World War III being cited in some conversations. Or even maybe Godwin's Law, where every argument on the internet eventually involves somebody be compared to Adolf Hitler. But I don't think the hyperbole alarm has much purpose at the moment when everybody informed, whether they are sympathetic to Donald Trump's increasingly dictatorial and fascistic regime or not, whether or not they despise dictators, whether they're in Venezuela or the United States of America, Honduras or Russia. The political model is repellent if you care about humanity. But everybody seems to feel that the prospect of the United States of America helping itself to Greenland is a very real prospect. I'm going to say that again, forgive me. The prospect of the United States helping itself to sovereign European territory is very, very real. It is feared by the current occupants of that territory. It is being warned against by allies of the current occupants of that territory. Well, most of them, because, of course, we're now talking about NATO first and the EU second. And we are being warned by people what know what they are talking about, that the, I mean, do we get taught this in schools? Do we know? Does the average Joe know why NATO is important? Do people understand why there hasn't really been a war on European soil since 1945? At least not a war involving major powers. We've had civil war, of course, in Yugoslavia, and technically Russia invading Ukraine is on European soil. But we haven't had, I mean, even the most cursory grasp of history. You don't even need to open a history book. You can just read Shakespeare. Look at the historical enmity between England and France. If you cast your net a little bit wider, then the involvement of Prussia and then Germany and then other countries, Spain and Portugal. I mean, the Europeans, until the arrival of NATO and the formation of the European Union, they went to war like it was football. We went to war with each other like it was a national sport. In fact, in many ways, it was a national sport. And since 1945... the vision of Winston Churchill and others has been realised, albeit that it originally involved the erection of an Iron Curtain, but it has sustained even after the fall of that curtain. Just look at Russia and Prussia. I mean, you don't need me to lecture you on this stuff, but the simple, single importance of peace on the European continent appears to be something that we are either ignoring or overlooking. If I came on the radio 10 years ago and said to you, I'm not sure NATO in its current form is going to be in place by the end of this year, I'd have been sectioned, well, that, professionally speaking. I'd have been taken to one side and told to, can we maybe do something on eye tests for old people today, do you think? Can you stop? Which we may well do later in the programme, by the way. That wasn't a snide aside. I honestly can't conceive of circumstances prior to this week, in which I might have sat behind this microphone and said to you, looks like NATO's looking shaky, lads. And because we don't fully know, and we are not taught, and we don't have the history, the knowledge, the level of engagement, I would find it easier as a radio phone-in host to make you care about, I don't know, lampposts. Victorian lampposts being torn up in Canterbury. I happen to love Victorian lampposts. I could probably make you care more about Victorian lampposts being torn down in Canterbury by idiotic councillors than I could about the possible end of NATO. That's possibly an exaggeration, but you take my point. It's on your doorstep. You can feel it. You can open your window now. Crikey, it's cold. You can open your window now and see what I am describing. It's your bread and butter. It's why immigration is such an easy button to press for dishonest and often racist politicians. They can make you fear that fella over there who looks a bit different from you or wasn't there yesterday. It's easy to do. NATO is under threat. It almost sounds like I should be wearing a dinner jacket and reading the news in 1952. NATO is under threat. The future of the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance organization was thrown into jeopardy last night as Stalin and Truman met in Yalta. But it's 2026. Well done. 1 out of 1. And it is a real warning from people who know what they're talking about. Which brings us back to one question that we asked yesterday and one that we may have asked but which we didn't answer. Well, should we go meta? Should we do the really big question first? What would it mean? What would the end of NATO mean? Because I think we've moved a little bit beyond the will he, won't he. The fact that everybody thinks it's entirely plausible that Donald Trump will seek to steal sovereign European territory, regardless of the wishes of its current inhabitants. The fact that nobody thinks it's implausible. The closest you'll get is, I really hope he's just trolling us. Spoiler alert, every time in recent years where people have said, I really hope Donald Trump is just trolling us, it turns out he wasn't. Everyone agrees on the plausibility. Everybody agrees on the plausibility of this happening. And most people agree. And I don't quite understand how you couldn't agree with this. So I'm going to say cautiously, all people with a brain must agree that if he helps himself to NATO territory, NATO-supported territory, and NATO is unable to resist, then NATO is over. What does that mean? And I am blessed with a listenership that reaches all corners of the globe, some of whom, of course, are from those corners and happen to live in the United Kingdom, but many, as we discover on a daily basis, are now listening to this programme overseas and elsewhere. Because your answer to this question, what would the end of NATO mean? I think if you are listening in Kyiv or you're listening, it's going to mean a lot more than if you're listening in Kidderminster. Two K's there. That's why I chose Kyiv. I'm from Kidderminster, just in case you're new to the programme. But I'm from Kidderminster. What does the end of NATO mean to you? Well, I don't think it's going to have much impact on the... they've closed the carpet museum before Christmas. That's what we're all talking about. You see what I mean? But if you're in Lithuania, if you're in Estonia, if you're in Tallinn, Finland, let alone Greenland or Denmark, what does the end of NATO mean? Poland, Eastern Europe, the countries that historically a rampant Russia has... invaded and suppressed, you're going to have a much bigger fear of what the end of NATO might mean than you are if you are waking up in Droitwich this morning. So what would it mean? 0345 6060 973. And then the question that is, I think, the one we're a little bit too frightened to ask, but if he wants to do it, there's nothing we can do. What is the likelihood of German, French and British troops turning up in Greenland and taking aim at Americans. Now, think about it. I don't think that's happened since the War of Independence, has it? I'll be corrected by historians imminently. So if Donald Trump decides, and the way the people around him are talking is a little bit like that letter that Boris Johnson's housemaster sent to him when he sent to his parents when he was at school, talks about the network of obligations. He doesn't seem to feel that the network of obligations that binds us all should apply to him. The people around Donald Trump seem to, clearly believe that if you can do something, then you are allowed to do it. That's it. That's all you need. It's a bit like how Elon Musk is running Twitter at the moment with this horrible story about the technology undressing girls, probably illegally. What's he going to do about it? Absolutely nothing, unless he has to. And when will he have to do anything about it? Probably never. So the only rule you have, if you don't have the rule of law, is the rule of capability. Are we capable of doing that? Yes. And within that question of capability becomes the prospect of resistance. Are we capable of doing, if we try to do that, will we succeed? And if the answer is yes, then we are allowed to do it. That's why when you read things like, don't talk to me about international law, or it's morally right, even if it's not legally right, these people are hideously wrong. Any grasp of history would tell you that these people are the harbingers of catastrophe. Because if there is not international law, if there are not rules-based institutions, if there are not supranational security, then there is nothing. There is simply Genghis Khan. There is Hitler. There is Stalin. There are simply leaders driven entirely by rapacious greed and territorial ambition. That's all that you are left with if you remove all of the things that some people in this country are already queuing up to rubbish and malign. That's all that you are left with. The question is, can I do it? And if the answer is yes, then I am allowed to. The only obstacle to that is international law, is treaties, like the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So if NATO fails, what happens? 0345-6060-973. And the question I don't want to ask you, because I hate the answer, and I'd love it if you could provide a different one, is that if Trump decides that he is going to take if Trump follows through on his promise to help himself to Greenland, what can we do about it? And by we, I mean the rest of the world. I mean the United Kingdom. I mean the European Union. I mean Greenland. I mean Denmark. I mean the West. I mean the Western Hemisphere. I don't know what I mean. I mean, we, the people who have a problem with despots helping themselves to sovereign territories occupied by people who don't want to be occupied. So any angle you want on the NATO question, what would it mean? And then quite specifically on the Trump question, what could we do? Here's what's going to happen, probably. A build-up of troops on Greenland, starting at the base that they currently have, where the United States flag flies currently alongside the Danish flag. At some point, the Danish flag comes down. The number of troops on Greenland becomes close to the number of people living there. And at some point on that graph, it will be too late to do anything about it. Pains me to say to you, I think we're probably looking that prospect squarely in the face, partly because of all the mealy-mouthed traitors who are trying to defend or justify his invasion of, or his annexation of Venezuela. Traitors to peace, traitors to the post-war settlement, traitors to the rules-based international order. I can't quite see what resistance would look like. Trump decides he wants Greenland. What can we do? 0345-6060-973.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
They say, go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. That's right, the Big Arch is back and it's here to stay. Big Arch, for big McDonald's hunger. Order in the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Upcharges apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
25 minutes after 10 is the time. And listen, my hyperbole alarm probably will go off in the course of the next sentence. But this could be, in some ways, the most important question I've ever asked you. In some ways. Because the question is this. If the United States of America decides to help itself to European soil, what can we do to stop it, him, them? 0345 6060 973. And that question this morning, in a very cheerful fashion, sits alongside the very real prospect of NATO no longer existing, which is the warning from the Danish Prime Minister in the context of precisely that prospect, the prospect of the United States helping itself to Greenland. So what would it mean? Big picture. How would we stop it? Somewhat smaller picture. Ben is in Paris. Ben, what would you like to say?
Thanks, James. Just on this question about NATO, the first thing I would say is I think it's the threat to NATO at the moment is just part of an ongoing sort of threat to the dismantlement of all organizations, like multilateral organizations that were put in place after the Second World War to keep international order and stop this type of thing happening. What this has done to a large extent, particularly in terms of European countries, has sort of led to this false kind of security, if you like, on the US as being the biggest sort of partner in NATO.
It wasn't false when the United States fulfilled its own ambitions to be the world's policeman. I mean, that was the point about European, quotes, failure, end quotes, to pay its way or to do more or to, spend more on defense. The United States was there doing it. So it wanted to. So it creates the problem, exactly. But it's not. Yeah, sorry. I'm just clarifying that.
Yeah, you're right. So rather than false, let's just say over-reliance on this. And basically what that's led to now is this sort of imbalance where, as you just said, all of a sudden an American president decides, oh, actually, I'm not as keen on this anymore because I'm not that keen on keeping international order as it was.
There's nothing in it for me. I think we can be pretty clear on what motivates Trump. What's in it for me? Why should I be protecting Poland? Why should I have two troops on the ground paying taxes, my tax dollars going towards people in Germany or people in Greenland? I want the money here.
Exactly. But the other thing I would say, just going back to my initial point, it's also the danger of the UN collapsing at the moment. I think you've had the US and people like that undermining the International Criminal Court. It's just a dismantling of all of these, the slow dismantling of these organs that were put in place.
It's a world of fortresses. That's how Yuval Noah Harari described it last year, is that you just have these massive powers who are free to do whatever they want. And all of the supranational institutions are bulwarks against that happening. And they are, as you say, they are all crumbling. So if you can, what would, for somebody listening to this in the United Kingdom, an intelligent, relatively well-informed person who is acknowledging this morning, much to their own surprise, they don't really know what the end of NATO would mean. To them, Ben, you would say what?
Well, I would say basically that there's a choice for governments. The end of NATO would mean that the countries and governments would need, particularly those at greatest threat, would need to make this decision, okay, we invest a significant amount of our budget and our funds in defence if we want to stop people invading our countries. Or we accept that Trump or whoever can say, right, you know what, we're going to take over Greenland. It's in your interest. And they just accept it. It's either that's the bottom line, I think.
And well, you've jumped ahead a little bit. I mean, because what you're doing, and it's interesting that you've jumped ahead, because it in many ways establishes what I'm going to say is the bleeding obvious, is that if there is the end of NATO, then countries that are currently protected by that network of treaties and by the military presence of NATO become vulnerable to invasion. They become vulnerable to external threat, which would most obviously be not from the United States of America, but from Russia. So those countries will have to either find a new pact, a new treaty, or become even more autonomous, militarily autonomous. I can't see the second thing happening, and I don't know what the first thing would look like, but it would probably have something to do with the European Union, which, of course, we voted to leave, which might be the topic of the second hour of the programme. Thank you, Ben. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Authorities in Switzerland say the bar where 40 people died in a fire on New Year's Day hadn't had any safety checks in 5 years. The mayor of Crans-Montana says inspections will now be carried out at all 128 local venues. The health secretary has defended the government's refusal to criticise America's intervention in Venezuela. Wes Streeting says the prime minister was choosing his words to positively influence a challenging moment in global politics. And Chelsea have confirmed Liam Rossignol as their new head coach. The former manager of the French side, Strasbourg, joins on a 6-year contract. LBC weather, staying very cold but dry for most today. Patchy snow showers across central and northern England and in the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and beyond. To the beauty of Bali, the warmth of Thailand, and the wonders of Vietnam, or many other Asian destinations. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Thailand starting from £614. Book your escape today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:32 on today's programme. Have you ever got a parking ticket that was really unfair? Oh no, hang on. That was option two. What happens if NATO ends? 0345 60 60973. Oh, and if the United States decide to help themselves to sovereign European territory, most obviously and urgently in Greenland, what can the rest of us do to stop him? 0345 60 60973 is the number that you need to answer both of those questions. I don't know if it's Idiot's Corner, but if you're going to get in touch with me to tell me that America hasn't annexed Venezuela, then you need to listen to what Donald Trump has said about who currently runs Venezuela. That's all. It's probably a waste of my breath to point out that he says he is running the place. You're perfectly entitled to say that he isn't, but it's probably you that needs to check your facts as opposed to me. The likelihood of a peaceful democratic handover to the correctly elected members is about as likely as pigs flying past the studio window in the next 5 minutes. And remember, the big difference between Maduro and Trump is that Maduro succeeded in his attempts to steal an election and Trump failed. So you put all your eggs in that basket if you want. Eric is in High Wycombe. Eric, what made you pick up the phone?
Morning, James. Yeah, mainly there's two aspects to this. I think there's the aspect, the political aspect of what happens to NATO if the US attempt this, and it will be an absolute disaster, and Europe would have to go its own way. Militarily, I think it's highly unlikely that they could even retain Greenland.
You mean NATO?
No, it's highly unlikely the United States could retain Greenland.
Go on.
What people forget is that the nations, the Scandinavian nations, and I also include Poland, to a lesser extent ourselves, and Holland, have expertise in Arctic warfare. Immense expertise in Arctic warfare. We have probably the NATO without USA probably outnumbers the United States in active manpower with Arctic training by a factor of probably 10 to 1. We have articulated vehicles that will do it, or the Scandinavian nations. You know, these are specialists. The Swedes, the Norwegians.
And they have, of course, recently been on manoeuvres because of what Vladimir Putin has been doing on their other borders.
Indeed. And, you know, what happens when you're fighting, when you're, you know, we're all struggling in the UK at the moment with paltry temperatures of minus -5. but, you know, once you get...
Snowflakes,
absolutely.
Literally.
But once you get down to minus -45, then you have issues with lubricants in vehicles, you have issues with rubber seals in vehicles, you have issues with all sorts
of... So what you're saying is that when Bobby Hamburger Jr. the Fourth from Texas arrives in Greenland charged with defending the territory against...
Yeah.
Except that you're jumping the gun, because that presumes a military response. Stephen Miller, and I asked for the clip actually, just literally before you came on, I didn't know what you were going to say, and hopefully the clip will appear before you disappear. Stephen Miller on CNN last night essentially saying... Well, not essentially, saying, literally, that there would be no prospect of a military response. Nobody, he said, is going to fight the US militarily over the future of Greenland. That's the gamble that they're taking. Your answer is, yeah, but if they did, they'd lose. My problem, well, in fact, I've got it here. This is incredible, isn't it? This is like the 21st century. I'll have a little listen to precisely that clip.
Can you say that military action against Greenland is off the table?
What do you mean military action against Greenland? The Greenland has a population of 30,000 people, Jake. The real question is, by what right does Denmark assert control over Greenland? What is the basis of their territorial claim? What is their basis of having Greenland as a colony of Denmark? The United States is the power of NATO. For the United States to secure the Arctic region, to protect and defend NATO and NATO interests, obviously Greenland should be part of the United States. And so that's a conversation that we're going to have as a country. That's a process we're going to have as a community of nations.
So you can't take it off the table that the U.S. would use military force to seize Greenland. You can't take it off the table.
Jake, I understand you're trying very hard to, which again, is your job. I respect it. It's great to get exactly the headline, right, that catchy headline.
I'm trying to get an answer of
the
question.
That says Miller refuses to rule out the United States should have Greenland as part of the United States. There's no need to even think or talk about this in the context that you're asking of a military operation. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland.
One last question, Stephen.
So that's the problem, Eric. Even if you're right, and I've got no reason to doubt you, their gamble, their calculation, and this guy is the Deputy Chief of Staff, the Homeland Security Advisor. I mean, his ignorance and arrogance aside, he got the population of Greenland wrong by a factor of about 100%. But hey-ho, they're in charge. It ain't going to come to the fight that you describe.
Yeah, you could say that, but... I seem to remember the CIA telling General Galtieri in Argentina that nobody would defend 8,000 people in the Falkland Islands.
Yeah, true.
And we did.
Hopefully I'll ring you back in a few months and say, Eric, you get the first prize of 2026 because you called it. Because if push were to come to shove, then there is an awful lot of mileage in your argument about the simple capabilities in that kind of military confrontation. But listen to how casually, Eric, we're talking about the notion of European troops having US troops in their crosshairs.
I know, and that blows my head to bits.
Same.
As it is. I think that the sovereignty makes people do very funny things, as we probably all know. I just think that
That will change everything. I mean, it does actually make the prospect of what we just described about crosshairs plausible, real, even perhaps urgent. And, you know, Eric mentions the Falklands, but what if Argentina decide to have another crack at the Falklands? And the United Kingdom didn't act entirely independently in defence, but Thatcher was only unhappy with the level of support that she received from the United States of America. In the theoretical future, if the Argentinians have another go at the Falklands, Ronald Reagan's support for Margaret Thatcher will look positively devoted compared to what we could expect from Donald Trump, I imagine. But that is the point about sovereignty. So what's wrong with this? Why should we worry about it? Well, because if America can help itself to whatever it wants, so can everyone. The only measure, the only test against which these decisions are made is whether or not we're going to get away with it. And even if you don't know whether you are or not, you can still try without any particular fear of repercussion anywhere except the battlefield. So why wouldn't Argentina have another swing? You heard what he was saying, what Stephen Miller was saying there about, well, of course we've got every right to it because we can take it. And they're not only getting the population of Greenland wrong by a factor of about 100%, but also, of course, lying through his teeth about why they want it. What on earth does the US element of NATO have to fear from Vladimir Putin when Donald Trump has never done a single thing in his life likely to disappoint the man and who publicly humiliated the only person on the planet who has stood up to Vladimir Putin properly, meaningfully and fatally in the last 20 years, Volodymyr Zelensky? Eric, thank you. Shree is in Liverpool. Shree, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Two things to answer your question. One, it's not a question of what happens when NATO fails. NATO has already failed when one of the founding members basically kidnaps a president of a sovereign nation, even if he is illegitimate. That's besides the point. You can't kidnap presidents. Second, what can we do? The honest answer is there is nothing we can do because the security of most of the European countries is very much coupled with the United States and rely on them for not just the military support or the defense support, but also in terms of intelligence and cybersecurity and also supply chain security as well. So that is the answer to both of your questions. To delve in a little deeper in terms of what we can do is honestly accept. I know you probably are aware of the five stages of grief.
Sure.
Basically, now what everybody is dealing with is five stages of grief of the collapse of the rules-based, law-based world order, because everybody is either denying what is happening.
So we're in denial.
The
good people are in denial. The bad people are perfectly comfortable with it. They're celebrating it. They're writing articles for the Times about why this is necessary and should be applauded.
Exactly. That's what. There are certain people who are in different states. Some people are denying it. Some people are angry about it. Some people are bargaining, saying he's only doing this for this particular reason.
Yeah.
Some people are just depressed about it because they can't do anything about it. I think the one thing everybody has to do is go to the final stage, acceptance. Accept that this is the world that we live in right now, that U.S. is acting like a rogue state. It is acting like an imperial and colonial power because, A, it can. You were right that U.S. was had put itself forward as the world's policeman, and it wanted to be that, but now it is very clear that it doesn't want to be that way, and it is acting like a rogue state.
And everything falls apart. Once you remove that thing that nobody ever conceived could be removed, America abnegating its role, abandoning its post as head of the West, if you like, as protector of Western interests, protector of European peace, protector of Europe. Once you remove that piece from the chessboard, everything else falls over.
Exactly. You remove the foundational piece, everything falls apart. I think the next step is basically looking at how do you decouple from the United States,
yes.
Because whatever we want to say and shout out or cry about, for the next 3 years, nothing is changing. Trump is just going to be Trump. It's going to get even more brazen. It is going to get even more corrupt. And it's just a matter of time before something even worse happens. So Europe and basically the entire world...
Like a territory that doesn't feel as distant as Greenland, perhaps. And I know it doesn't feel distant to a lot of people listening to this program, but the idea that Hitler would stop with Sudetenland is the one that I took away from yesterday's program, and the naivety of that... The absurdity of that. Do you fancy a little test?
Yeah.
Ready? Who said this in 1981? If we are not going to live by a system of international law, we are going to live by international anarchy. There are no people anywhere in the world that are safe. Sorry, then no people anywhere in the world are safe.
Sure. Was it Reagan?
No. Not a bad guess, though. I shall tell you who it was after this.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would like to make 2026 the year of the pub because I do not want to see this institution die. If it dies because no one goes, fine. If it dies because it's not profitable, because people are choosing not to do it in that way, then, okay, that's a choice, so be it. Businesses have to wash their own face. But these changes are some of the ways in which this entire industry is just being killed without people even having a choice. It doesn't matter if a lot of people go, it still won't be profitable because of the tax changes made. That ain't fair.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday, from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love. And it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulgutthealth.com/radio.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:47 is the time. That quote once again, and the little mystery of who said it back in June of 1981. And I'll give you an extended version of it compared to the one that I shared with you just before the break. If we are not going to live by a system of international law, we are going to live by international anarchy. Then no people anywhere in the world are safe. You cannot be selective in your defence of law. You cannot say, I like that law. I will uphold that one. I will not uphold the other. Now, this is absolutely fascinating for a whole heap of reasons, many of which have more to do with things we were discussing last year than things that we've discussed so far this year. That was Margaret Thatcher in June of 1981, giving an interview to the Jewish Chronicle. After the interviewer, Monty Modlin, expressed or appeared to express annoyance that she had criticised Operation Opera, which was a surprise airstrike by the Israeli Air Force on an unfinished nuclear reactor near Baghdad. So this is a reminder of the days when you could be a supporter of the State of Israel while also condemning breaches of international law, up to and including, in more recent years, adjudicated genocide or possible genocide, probable genocide, or genocide according to all sorts of human rights organizations, both inside and outside Israel. I mentioned that to you a few times last year, but I hadn't got such a wonderful example of it. You do not have to approve of everything Benjamin Netanyahu does by dint of being supportive of the modern state of Israel. Margaret Thatcher, an avowed cheerleader of the modern state of Israel. But she wouldn't sanction, or she wouldn't endorse, or she wouldn't excuse egregious breaches of international law, because that way, anarchy lies. If we are going to live by a system of international law, if we are not going to live by a system of international law, we are going to live by international anarchy. Then no people anywhere in the world are safe. You cannot be selective in your defense of law. You cannot say, I like that law, I will uphold that one, I will not uphold the other. In much the same way, you can't say, I like that leader, so I don't care about international law, but I don't like that leader, so I do. The parallels between Trump and Maduro are extraordinary. They both tried to steal elections. One failed. One succeeded. The one who failed has now kidnapped the one who succeeded. And you sit there in judgment on whether or not we should suspend international... I mean, it's incredible, right? But that quote from Margaret Thatcher, I suspect you'll be hearing it a lot more in coming weeks, because it just cuts to the heart of things, doesn't it? And it, all the more powerful, because it is not necessarily from an obvious source for modern readers and listeners. If you're paying attention at the time, back in the second or third year of her administration, you wouldn't have been that shocked by that, although the interviewer from the Jewish Chronicle, I think, was. But that is it. I mean, W.B. Yeats put it even better in that poem that I'm obsessed with, the one about the falcon and the widening gyre, and mere anarchy is loosed upon the earth. That's the literal line that Yeats uses. I don't know if Thatcher was aware of that. Round and round in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the centre cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the earth. That's your answer. What happens if NATO fails? Mere anarchy is loosed upon the earth. And the final couplet of that first verse of that poem? The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Listen back, use rewind. Listen back to that clip of Stephen Miller talking on CNN a few moments ago. And have that phrase of Yeats bubbling away in the back of your mind. The best lack all conviction. Listen to Keir Starmer yesterday. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Things fall apart, the centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the earth. What happens when we have no rules-based international order? What happens when NATO fails? What happens when the European Union falls apart? What happens when the protectors of peace post-1945 disintegrate? Have a little listen to what Chuck Schumer had to say from the other side of the Atlantic in 2026, indeed yesterday, on pretty much the same subject.
This briefing, while very extensive and long, posed far more questions than it ever answered. Their plan for the U.S. running Venezuela is vague, based on wishful thinking, and unsatisfying. I did not receive any assurances that we would not try to do the same thing in other countries. And in conclusion, when the United States engages in this kind of regime change and so-called nation building, it always ends up hurting the United States I left the briefing feeling that it would again.
10:53 is the time. It's maybe a little unfair on people like Chuck Schumer and Keir Starmer, but the people who know the gravity of the situation that we're in internationally are described as the best in that poem. And the people who are embracing it and rushing headlong into it are the worst. And he's right, old Yeats. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Helda is in Enfield on the questions of NATO and possible resistance of a Greenland grab. Helda, what would you like to say?
Unfortunately, James, I don't know if you remember me. We spoke a couple of years ago, but I am personally a former NATO soldier that actually served on the front lines.
I do remember now. I didn't at first. Forgive me. I take quite a lot of phone calls, Helda, but I remember now you've provided a bit of context. Carry on.
Unfortunately, it saddens me to say that we're asking the wrong question. It's not if NATO has failed. NATO has already failed. It's finished. It's dead.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that it? I mean, are you going to hang up now, Helda?
No. I'll explain, James. Yes. If you were inside a NATO base, okay, well, once upon a time when I served, you'd go to the mess hall and you'd have Americans, Brits, Belgians, Dutch, Portuguese, Italians, okay, and we were all in the same mess hall, sharing the same meal and sharing experiences. It's quite common to have a table with two Brits, an American, an Italian, and a Portuguese, you know, all sharing anecdotes and stories, you know. That was the basis of NATO.
Of course.
The moment Trump said, we need Greenland, not we would like to, we would want to, the moment he said, we need Greenland, NATO is dead. Think of a mess hall, think of an officer's mess in a NATO base right now. You have American officers getting orders from back home. You have Danish officers getting orders from back home. You have British and French officers looking at both sides thinking, what do we do?
Wow. And you arrived at this conclusion back then, I presume. You didn't need to wait until Venezuela or until the hardening of resolve or the strengthening of rhetoric.
No, James. 2 years ago, May 24, the first time we spoke, we discussed how both Trump and Brexit were two pincers of the same movement. Fracture Europe, weaken it, and then all bets are off. And unfortunately, I will give you another prognostic for the next year, okay?
Yeah.
America grabs Greenland, Putin goes into the Baltic states, and a little detail that's went unmissed, overnight, China has issued an ultimatum to the United States, release Maduro, get out of Venezuela, or else. While we're all busy with Greenland and the Baltics, China grabs Taiwan, and then who knows what comes next? Unfortunately, James, I think we are in a position now where we are in Britain, end of 38, and during 39. Rearm, rearm, rearm. And I'll go one further. It's going to fall to Britain, France, and Germany to arm the Poles to the absolute back teeth, because when the time comes, it will be them that will get us out of this.
They'll be first in the firing line, so to speak. I think that the thing that I missed, and I forget whether we discussed this on May the 24th, but the thing that perhaps I missed was the motivation. Because I can understand Xi Jinping's motivation with regard to Taiwan, Vladimir Putin's motivation with regard to Ukraine. I don't know whether I felt that we were somehow inhabitants of a different moral or intellectual universe in the West. But I didn't understand why Trump would want to be part of that. And then a year later, in May of 2025, I read you, Noah Yuval Harari's piece about a world of fortresses. And if you listen to Stephen Miller's comments a moment ago, that is what they want. They act. No, I mean, this is Orwell as well, isn't it? Orwell got it. This is what they want. You can't have the kind of power that Trump and his cronies crave without recognizing that there'll be other poles of comparable power elsewhere in the world. You will just have your half or your third. You will have, and they've started using the language of the Western Hemisphere. You will have the Western Hemisphere. Putin can have the Eastern Hemisphere, or Putin and Xi Jinping can share out what's... I mean, this sounds insane, though, still, Helder, doesn't it? To you? A little bit?
You say it does, James.
I know I do.
But there's another small component that we're not talking about here, okay? And we should. A week ago, we were in a position where Donald Trump was immensely under pressure over the Epstein files.
Yeah,
and he was also staring the face of a huge, huge defeat in the American midterms. What are we talking about today, James?
I'm never 100%, because I can hold two thoughts in my head at the same time. We referenced Epstein quite a lot yesterday, and we'll continue to do so. But in terms of what is currently most important... The timing of the Venezuelan move may have something to do with what you describe, but the desire runs much, much deeper than Jeffrey Epstein or any of the concerns about what are in the still unpublished papers. You know that, and I know that. The designs upon Greenland haven't come about as a consequence of trying to distract from Epstein. So
no.
I'm always sympathetic to the dead cat theory, but I think sometimes we possibly put too much weight on it. It's more okay. about timing than substance, the dead cat here.
You are spot on, James.
Thank
it's
you.
All about timing, okay?
Yes.
Now, picture this possible scenario, okay, which in my head is exactly what's going to happen. Trump goes into the midterms as the conqueror of Greenland, and he turns it from a massive loss, getting impeached and put into prison, to going down in his head as the president that they expanded the United States. And you know what, James?
Go on.
I think it will work.
Well, I don't have a clue whether it... I just can't... I mean, I don't know, really, what the average... There's no such thing as an average American, as we know. There's probably no such thing as an average Brit, to be honest, or even an average resident of Enfield, Helder. But would... I mean, Americans... I mean, how many Americans could even find Greenland on a map?
Exactly the point. They can't find it on the map, but it's another victory, another military victory. And James...
And they'll dress it up as that. Well, you really think so? This is the only bit, and you're going to ring me again in 2 years and just go very politely, you see, James, I've warned you. But the average American doesn't want to have any military tension or war with Europe. Oh, no.
They don't care, James.
No, they do. That's why they've been pretending that we've got all sorts of problems with Muslims and immigrants and Sadiq Khan in London and all of the rest of it, designed to portray Europe as being in need of American intervention or American help, with Lord Haw-Haws and Lady Haw-Haws from Farage to little Tommy Ten Names all joining in, portraying their own country as something in a state of peril or something in a state of disarray or chaos, when obviously
the
opposite
James.
Is
and
true.
If you add... And if you add the support that they're putting behind reform in this country, the AfD in Germany, and all sorts of populist, right-wing, far-right parties across Europe, they have been putting us in this position on purpose. And we're coming to the end game. Now, the question is, what do we do about this?
Go on, then. We're late for the news, but I think I'm going to pause.
We have to start rearming.
So this is when we're back to 38, 39. And Germany kind of have, but they were looking towards Ukraine.
Yes.
So look, briefly, the prospect of a front on what, and you've been to fronts, I have not, and almost certainly never will. But realistically, the prospect of a front where one side is waving the Star-Spangled Banner and the other side is waving the flag of Europe or European countries or the European Union or a sort of filleted NATO. Really? Can you see that happening?
It's happened. It's not that I can see it. It's already happened. You have a polarized world where you have the United States.
Yeah, it's happening metaphorically. It's not happening on a battlefield.
Not yet.
But can you? So you're answering your question. You're saying, yes, of course I can envision that. And just listen to Stephen Miller and tell me how concerned he is about the prospect of United States forces lining up on the opposite side of a battlefield to European forces. And the stuff about Farage and the rest of them and those dreadful people on GB News constantly denigrating the United Kingdom, constantly denigrating London, isn't so much about their idiocy and treachery. It's about what it tells the American people. So again, you know, no tinfoil hats needed. But if you've been confused by that, why so many Americans, even Jimmy Wales was telling me, the guy that founded Wikipedia, about his American friends, like high-powered, super influential, informed, highly educated people who were buying this nonsense propaganda about Europe not being safe, about London not being safe, that is a narrative that has come off social media. And, you know, Why are they doing that, we asked a few times last year. Answer, because the American people need to believe that Europe is in danger or under threat in order to... it's still not there, personally. But it does feel like the jigsaw pieces are on the table. We're just perhaps not putting them yet in quite the right places. But, Helda, I think we might have had the 10 best calls of 2026, and it's only the second show of the year. So, in fact, it's only the end of the fourth hour of the year. And if we carry on taking calls of this calibre for the rest of 2026, then I'll probably retire at the end of it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a cabinet minister has defended the government's refusal to criticise America's intervention in Venezuela. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says the Prime Minister is choosing his words carefully to influence the situation positively. Separately, President Trump has reiterated that he's serious about the idea of controlling Greenland on national security grounds. But Wes Streeting has told LBC the government is clear the island belongs to Denmark.
Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark. That's their choice. That's their self-determination. And I've heard what President Trump has said overnight. Greenland is playing its part in the NATO alliance. They are a critical part of this country's national security.
Swiss authorities say the bar where 40 people died in a fire on New Year's Day hadn't had any safety checks for 5 years. 116 people were injured, with many suffering serious burns. The mayor of Crans-Montana says inspections will now be carried out at all 128 local venues. The Prime Minister has told his cabinet the UK is turning the corner and has urged ministers to use 2026 to focus on tackling the cost of living.
Renewal is becoming reality. Getting our country back on track is hard, difficult work. And we will reject the politics of easy answers and gimmicks that frankly got us here in the first place.
Sir Keir Starmer's held his first cabinet meeting of the new year at Downing Street this morning. He is due to travel to Paris later to meet with allies of Ukraine to discuss efforts to secure a peace deal. The government says its new online hospital service will help cut wait times in England from next year. People will be able to speak to specialists about issues such as prostate problems, the menopause and eyesight issues. GPs will then be able to refer patients for tests if needed. Snow and ice warnings remain in place across many parts of the UK. Hundreds of schools across northern Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland are closed due to the weather. And Chelsea have confirmed the appointment of Liam Rossini as their new head coach on a 6-year contract. He replaces Enzo Maresca, who stepped down on New Year's Day. Rossini, who leaves the French club Strasbourg, joined Chelsea, who are fifth in the Premier League. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 51 at 10,055. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most today. Snow showers for central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Seven minutes after 11 is the time. There's some usually comfort in comprehension, isn't there? The comfort of comprehension, that's a nice phrase. So suddenly now it all becomes clear. Why have there been such desperate attempts to portray my hometown more than anywhere else in the world, I think, London, online, on these mad... A number of pro-reform accounts that turned out to be bots was in the news at the weekend. I'll try and dig that out for you as well. And you hear reform politicians from Farage down all denigrating London and claiming that it's damaged, and obviously every city has crime, but major crime, serious crime in this city is actually actually falling. There's a story in the Times today. US billionaires snap up London mansions. And the reality is so completely at odds with what is portrayed online. And I struggled a bit last year to understand why they were doing this. But there is one possible answer. All right. Maybe the hyperbole alarm should have gone off. But if the US administration wants to present to the US people a justification, a rationale for essentially stealing European soil, then they might currently be claiming we need to protect that soil from Russia. But the leap to pretending or claiming that we need to protect Europe from all the immigrants, I don't know. I'm just saying, don't be shocked if that's where we move to next. I don't know if it's quite idiot's corner, but Keith has been in touch with a survey of what the least safe cities in the world are. And even if you read the clip you've sent me, Keith, you can see it's based on user-generated data, which is about as valid as a Daily Express poll asking you to pay 50p to ring in and vote for Keir Starmer to be executed. The point about what you've sent me is that it was online asking people to name unsafe cities, so all the racists named Bradford because it has a high Asian population. You're literally proving my point for me while sending me a message saying, oh, do you really think things aren't safe? It's extraordinary how thick you are. And I say that normally with a little bit of regret or affection, but I don't. I mean, you are pig ignorant, and you're falling for treacherous lies on social media. And now we have perhaps a slightly better understanding of why Americans are being groomed to believe that this city, this country, this continent is somehow less safe than the United States of America. Or Honduras, where, of course, Donald Trump recently pardoned the former president who was serving 45 years for cocaine trafficking. Anyway, it feels a bit wrong to move on, doesn't it? It feels a bit wrong to step away from the assembly of possibilities that we I've embarked upon yesterday and now today. It's still inconceivable to me. A little tribute there to the late Rob Reiner for people who pay attention to such things. It is inconceivable on one level to me that we are having a conversation about the United States helping itself to sovereign European territory. But, you know, I glance to my left and there is footage of the Prime Minister of Denmark delivering a speech in which he is clearly concerned about this very real prospect. I glance to my right, there's footage on CNN of Stephen Miller telling an interviewer that the United States has every right to help itself to Greenland. Has every right to help itself to Greenland. Getting the population of the territory wrong by a factor of about 100%, roughly half of what the number actually is, but that's just by the by, isn't it, for people whose combination of ignorance and arrogance is truly, truly toxic. We might listen to that clip again, actually, as we set up the next bit of the conversation, which is the second half of what we did in the last hour, but to which we didn't pay a huge amount of attention. In terms of feasibility, so we're talking a lot about plausibility and feasibility. And I think we are now parking the debate about whether or not it is plausible and or feasible that the United States will try to steal Greenland. Nobody, to the best of my knowledge, is arguing, that it's unfeasible or implausible. The best case scenario is that it's hyperbole or trolling. That's why I want to play the Stephen Miller clip again and ask you whether or not that sounds to you like somebody who is lying or chasing clicks and giggles. Such an these hideously inadequate men who pursue power solely in order to hurt other people in the hope of fixing themselves. Nobody has ever fixed themselves by hurting other people, either at a family level, at a domestic level or on an international, a global level. Nobody has ever fixed themselves. Look at Elon Musk. Does he look to you like a man who has fixed himself by hurting other people? It just doesn't happen like that. You see it unfolding right across the world. All of the worst people in history thinking they could somehow fix those empty chasms inside themselves by hurting others, by suppressing others, by undertaking genocides and holocausts, by enslaving other human beings, by robbing people of their agency, by locking them up, by hurting them, by killing them, by stealing from them. I'm going to feel, eventually I'll feel better. From Henry VIII to Adolf Hitler to Donald Trump to Stephen Miller to Vladimir Putin to all of them. Eventually I'll feel better. I'll feel less. I'll hate myself less if I can just hurt some people more. So have another listen to this, and I think we can take away then the over-optimistic claim that these people are messing with us or exaggerating. Okay, this is real and it is happening now.
It has been the formal position of the U.S. government since the beginning of this administration, frankly, going back into the previous Trump administration, that Greenland should be part of the United States. The president has been very clear about that. That is the formal position of the U.S. government.
Right, but can you say that military action against Greenland is off the table?
It wouldn't be military action against Greenland. The Greenland has a population of 30,000 people, Jake. The real question is, by what right does Denmark assert control over Greenland? What is the basis of their territorial claim? What is their basis of having Greenland as a colony of Denmark? The United States is the power of NATO. For the United States to secure the Arctic region, to protect and defend NATO and NATO interests, obviously Greenland should be part of the United States. And so that's a conversation that we're going to have as a country. That's a process we're going to have as a community of nations.
So you can't take it off the table that the U.S. would use military force to seize Greenland. You can't take it off the table.
Jake, I understand you're trying very hard to, which again, is your job. I respect it. It's great to get exactly the headline, right, that catchy headline.
I'm trying to get an answer to the
question. That says Miller refuses to rule out. The United States should have Greenland as part of the United States. There's no need to even think or talk about this in the context that you're asking of a military operation. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland.
One last question, Stephen.
Doesn't make any sense.
One last question.
And that's the next conversation. I think he's just right, isn't he? Can you conceive of circumstances in which anybody fights the United States militarily over the future of, he says Greenland, I say Europe. Fight the United States militarily over the future of Europe. It's like getting the eggs out of a baked cake, isn't it? Getting the United States out of Europe. Just look at Mildenhall. Various other places, many of which you won't be aware of. I'm not. I'm constantly educated by you on the existence of sites, if you like, that involve American presence on European soil, on British soil, never mind the rest of Europe. Absolutely extraordinary to think that we're even having this conversation. But there is Stephen Miller. I mean, you know, reputedly, the closest thing that Donald Trump has to a consigliere in policy terms, the person most closely associated, the person most publicly and closely associated with everything from Project 2025 right through to last year's national security statement. The idea that the United States is no longer an upholder of Western values, no longer an upholder of European peace, no longer an upholder of international law, and no longer an upholder of NATO. Wow. Tempted to say that again, but I'm not sure I'd remember all the elements of things that the United States is no longer an upholder of. European peace, international law, national sovereignty. Remember all the Brexit lads? Mad about sovereignty? Have a listen to what Stephen Miller thinks about sovereignty. What right has Greenland got to be Greenland when it should just be the 51st state? Incredible. But that line, that final line there about militarily, nobody will fight the United States militarily over Greenland. Just delete the word Greenland from that sentence and replace it with whatever you want. No, that's the real question, isn't it? At what point does Europe step up? Replace the word Greenland with the word, I don't know, Birmingham, or Andorra, or Gibraltar, or I don't know. The point at which Stephen Miller would not so blithely and ignorantly insist, but probably correctly, that there's no way anybody is going to fight the United States militarily over that bit of Europe, that sovereign bit of Europe. But, you know, I mean, we can all conceive of circumstances in which we would push back against the theft of sovereign European territory. The US Department of State published on their own Twitter feed yesterday the following. This is our, in enormous red letters, O-U-R, this is our hemisphere. This is our hemisphere. And President Trump will not allow our security to be threatened. It looks like Nazi propaganda. Even the colouring, the red lettering, the black and white photograph of Trump in the background, the capitalization of our security to be threatened by what? By Vladimir Putin? The man whose toes you tickle on such a regular basis that you are even prepared to publicly humiliate his enemy in the Oval Office? I don't know what other phone-ins we can do today, but are the Americans really that stupid? Are enough Americans stupid enough to swallow this? Donald Trump is either in Vladimir Putin's pocket or so far in hock to him, so fearful of him that he will never do anything that Vladimir Putin doesn't like, is now going to convince the American people that they have to annex sovereign parts of Europe because they're so frightened of Vladimir Putin. The bloke who gets to write his own peace deal and then have it promoted by Donald Trump's White House. The bloke who is illegally invading the country that Volodymyr Zelensky is defending, but who gets humiliated in the Oval Office? Who gets humiliated by the President of the United States? Is it Putin, the war criminal, or is it Volodymyr Zelensky, the hero? Yep, you're right. Trump goes after the hero, and now he tries to persuade the American people that the real threat is coming from Putin, therefore he has to steal, annex, occupy sovereign European territory? That might be tomorrow's phone-in. Are the Americans really stupid? They voted for him twice, even after he tried to steal an election and incited an insurrection in his own country. Are they really that stupid? Are enough of them that really, really that stupid? So is he right? Is Stephen Miller right that nobody is going to fight against the United States militarily over Greenland? 0345-6060-973. The question becomes, where is the line? When do we step in? That's where the echoes of Sudetenland ring true, isn't it? Okay, he'll stop with Greenland, don't worry. Still can't believe we're having this conversation. Still can't believe we're having this conversation. Let's get the phone lines up and running. 0345-6060-973. Knowing what you know and other European perspectives would be particularly welcome here. Germany, France, particularly the Baltic states, Estonia, Lithuania. Stephen Miller is adamant that we will do nothing to defend Greenland against American aggression, against American theft. Is he right? 0345-6060-973. And then I will add two more questions. Where would the line be for the, can't believe I'm saying this out loud, for European allies to take up arms against the United States? What would it take? But crucially, if they do find the ability to resist, to push back, what would it look like? So the United States begins probably quite quickly increasing its presence on the ground in Greenland. What does resistance look like? 0345-6060-973. This is a little bit simplistic, but Venezuela is Crimea. Greenland is Ukraine. What comes next?
This is LBC.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 24 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the questions are almost unbelievable, and it's only the second show of 2026. Is Stephen Miller, one of Donald Trump's closest allies and head of Homeland Security, deputy director of something or other, correct when he says that nobody is going to militarily defend Greenland against US aggression? It is his wife, Miller's wife. And you know the thing that's slightly annoying when you listen to him speak and you look at him. And I don't normally say things like this, but I'm going to allow myself one moment of infantile critique. When you look at his ridiculous head, it was his, you know he's loving this. Even speaking about himself in the third person to Jake Tapper, saying, you know, you want the headline, Miller says this, Miller says that. It was his wife who put a picture of Greenland on her social media with it painted in the Stars and Stripes of America. And he is the one insisting that nobody is going to defend Greenland militarily against the United States of America. And I have two questions. One, is he right? And two, if we did, what on earth would it look like? 0345 60 60 973. Tom's in Maidstone. Tom, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello,
yeah,
Tom.
I've been listening to the conversation this morning, and Miller's wrong. Miller is basically a mouthpiece, you know, for a far right, out of control organization, which is thinking it can do anything it damn well pleases. Now, we don't necessarily have to go and fight the United States, but we have to show sufficient resolve. Greenland is effectively a European country, as you said, and it is a country which basically we could send troops to and establish a base on. At the invitation of the Danish government, along with all of the other European members of NATO, and it would provide a deterrence. If nothing else, it would pause the Americans to think, well, actually, is this a step which we really want to take? How would this look with our domestic audience if we then start, you know, if we start having a fight with the European partners of NATO?
I don't know when we'll turn our attention to the domestic audience, probably sooner rather than later. It's hard to talk about them in a homogenous way, but do they care about any of this? That's the bit I don't fully understand. The Venezuelan stuff, I mean, this is partly the benefit of having almost total control of US media now, isn't it? But the Venezuelan stuff, I can just about see how the average American might be persuaded to believe that they've done it for, you know, bona fide reasons. Just don't mention the Honduran president that got a pardon, or the thousands of people, including drug dealers, that Donald Trump has pardoned as president. Don't mention any of that. We look good. We're being strong. I don't even know. I can't finish this sentence. Is the domestic audience buying this narrative over Venezuela? Do we even know?
I don't know.
Nor do I. God knows what Greenland. What do you do? What do you say to Joe Schmo on Fifth Avenue about why we're going into Greenland and upsetting all our European allies and essentially destroying NATO?
Well, you know, this is the $64,000 question. I mean, the point is, you know, Trump is thinking about this as a land grab. Yes, Greenland's going to become a very strategic place in the years to come, particularly with global warming, because it's going to open up routes, the Northwest Passage and routes, shortening routes between the Pacific and the Atlantic. But the point is that
they have to do something with physical. They have to do something physical. I've got a statement a couple of minutes old that I'm going to share when I finish talking to you, which is from various presidents and prime ministers, chancellors of all the countries you'd hope for and expect. But they are mere words. They are words. And your argument very much is that we need actions.
And it's a meaningful deterrence. At the end of the day, one stop short of war is deterrence. And this is really which Trump will have to consider. And in fairness, I think, if you show up a sufficient resolve against him, he will back down because he doesn't actually want to fight. He's promised his people, his MAGA audience, that they're not going to have
forever wars. No more forever wars, and he's supposed to. I mean, some of the comment pieces the Telegraph published about how he's a pacifist and how he hates violence and how liberals can't get their head around the idea that Donald Trump is going to be a force for peace. It's quite extraordinary to think that they'll still get paid, but that feels, that feels like last year's conversation. So it would involve the countries that I'm about to list doing something rather than simply saying what they have said in the last 2 minutes. Thank you, Tom. I'll read this statement in full and then we'll head towards the news headlines. This comes from President Macron of France, Chancellor Merz of Germany, Prime Minister Meloni of Italy, Prime Minister Tusk of Poland, Prime Minister Sanchez of Spain, Prime Minister Starmer of the United Kingdom, and Prime Minister Frederiksen of Denmark on the subject of Greenland. It is a joint statement from all of those leaders of sovereign countries. Arctic security remains a key priority for Europe, and it is critical for international and transatlantic security. NATO has made clear that the Arctic region is a priority, and European allies are stepping up. We and many other allies have increased our presence, activities and investments to keep the Arctic safe and to deter adversaries. The Kingdom of Denmark, including Greenland, is part of NATO. Security in the Arctic must therefore be achieved collectively in conjunction with NATO allies, including the United States, by upholding the principles of the UN Charter, including sovereignty, territorial integrity, and the inviolability of borders. These are universal principles, and we will not stop defending them. The United States is an essential partner in this endeavour as a NATO ally and through the defence agreement between the Kingdom of Denmark and the United States of 1951. Greenland belongs to its people. It is for Denmark and Greenland and them only to decide on matters concerning Denmark and Greenland. So hold that in your mind. Use rewind if you want. And reflect upon the words of Margaret Thatcher in June of 1981. If we are not going to live by a system of international law, we are going to live by international anarchy. Then no people anywhere in the world are safe. You cannot be selective in your defence of law. You cannot say, I like that law, I will uphold that one, I will not uphold the other. In other words, as this joint statement from the leaders of France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Spain, the United Kingdom and Denmark have just released, these are universal principles. Sovereignty, territorial integrity, the inviolability of borders. And we will not stop defending them. Which makes our decision 28 minutes ago to ask what defending them would actually look like all the more pertinent. And you can continue trying to answer that question after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
President Trump's doubled down on threats to take Greenland, telling US media that America needs the territory. Denmark, which owns the island, has warned that such a move could mark the end of NATO. Swiss authorities have admitted the bar where 40 people died in a fire on New Year's Day hadn't had any safety checks in 5 years. The mayor of Crans-Montana says inspections will now be carried out at all 128 local venues. And Keir Starmer has told his cabinet that he wants to focus on tackling the cost of living in their first official meeting of the year. Keir told ministers their challenge for 2026 is to show focus and determination on easing the financial burden on households. LBC weather staying very cold today, but dry. Patchy snow showers for central and the north of England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 973.
25 minutes to 12 is the time. I don't know that it's possible to study enough history. I mean, it is really often the only way you can get your head around modern events is through a lens of the similar things that have happened in the past. It's a podcast I'd quite like to do, actually, in terms of what lessons history teaches us about recent events. But it's... but not something I'm qualified to do. And of course, nobody is, because everyone has specialties. So someone might know loads about the Opium Wars or about, I don't know, Ribbentrop or about the, for me, my A-level was in Charlemagne and the Byzantine Empire. I'm no use on, treaty at Versailles. Well, I'm not bad, but do you see what I mean? We don't have, I suppose we may have it soon with AI, but the lessons from history. What are the ones that you're hearing today? What echoes from the past are you hearing today? Oh, don't worry, his territorial ambitions will end with Greenland. Oh, don't worry, his territorial ambitions will end with Austria. Don't worry, his territorial ambitions will end with Sudetenland. Oh, my God, he's invaded Poland. I don't know. What historical echoes are you hearing today? And that's just looking west. You look east. Find me an Estonian or a Lithuanian who doesn't believe that Vladimir Putin has their countries in his sights and in his dreams, and I'll find you a liar, a traitor, or an idiot. And yet, here we are. Here we are. Stephen Miller is certain that nobody will defend Greenland militarily against the United States of America. Phillips O'Brien, our friend at St. Andrews University, has posted this morning a chilling phrase. The US is more likely to fight Europe than fight for it. The presumed idiocy of the American electorate, and I say presumed because I would love to be presumed wrong, I'd love to be proved wrong, hinges on this pivot now. We have put enormous amounts of effort with the help of various bot farms and Russian propagandists into portraying Europe as a continent in peril. We have pretended that immigration from Muslim countries has somehow rendered it a less safe place than America, where you can't even send your children to school in the confidence that they are unlikely to be shot at. Oh, and if they are, Donald Trump's allies will pretend that their parents are liars and that the shooting didn't happen at all. But the pivot now is from pretending that Europe is in peril because of immigration to pretending that European is in peril from Russia? How on earth is Donald Trump going to sell that to the American people? You remember that guy we abused in the Oval Office? Yeah, he's the good guy. You remember that guy we insulted and humiliated in the Oval Office? Yeah, he's actually the good guy. He's the one standing up to the real enemy. The real enemy is the guy that I love and praise often. No wonder Farage is staying so quiet. Politician I admire most is Vladimir Putin. And the only one he possibly admires more than Vladimir Putin is Donald Trump, who now poses an existential threat to NATO. The way in which the actions of some Western politicians could have been scripted by Vladimir Putin, whether he was paying them or not, is something that really historians of the future, as opposed to historians of the past or the present, as we were referring to a moment ago, historians of the future are going to look back and truly baffle over how this wasn't more widely acknowledged, over why people like Carol Cadwalader, when they were explaining the role that Russia played in dismantling, diluting the hegemony, the security, the safety, the unity of Europe, and then of America, and then of the entire West, all parts of the same process, all stemming back to Putin and to Russia. It's going to baffle them. They're going to look at it and say, but it was all there. All the evidence was there. Some people, some lone voices, were even shouting it from the rooftops. And yet, members of the political class, members of the media, weren't just blind to it. Some of them were joining in. They were praising Putin and slagging off Europe. They were parroting Kremlin talking points when it came to the rationale for invading Crimea or invading Ukraine. People like Nigel Farage were leading in the opinion polls in the United Kingdom in 2025, having effectively been the biggest cheerleader Vladimir Putin could dream of in Europe. And of course, who did he cheer for in United States politics? Donald Trump. Vladimir Putin's dreams come true on the geopolitical stage, up to and including the kidnapping of the president of Venezuela, which gives permission to Xi Jinping and to Vladimir Putin to act similarly in the territories that they covet and the territories that they've got their eyes on, because things fall apart. Because, as Margaret Thatcher, of all people, reminded us, you don't get to choose. If we are not going to live by a system of international law, we are going to live by international anarchy. Or, as W.B. Yeats put it, things fall apart. The centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the earth. And here we are. John's in Chelsea. Sorry, John. I went off on an unexpected tangent. What would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I'm not living in Chelsea, actually. I'm just driving through it. But anyway, my point is that I'm involved in oil and gas and mining my entire career. I'm currently on the board of a company that is investing in Greenland.
Okay.
And what I find odd about this whole situation is it's illogical. Is that if America wants strategic minerals in Greenland, its companies can go in there and apply for licenses and do the mining. There's nothing stopping them. The fact of the matter is that very few companies are actually looking at Greenland for these things because it's difficult. Climate change has helped it a little bit, but actually access and so on is still only part of a year. A lot of stuff is still covered by ice. Mm. And developing a mine, rare earths, geothermal, oil and gas, takes years and years and years. As I said, the economic terms are very good, so the rent that any profit is made is split between the contractor who does the work and the government is very generous towards the contractor compared to many other places in the world. So there's nothing stopping American companies piling in there, taking up all the licenses and getting whatever they want. But the fact is very few of them have. America doesn't have a national mining company that will go in and, rape, the resources if that's what it wants. So I just don't see the logic. And also they have a base there in Thule, up in the northwest of Greenland, which they've had for decades. They can put more people there if they want, and that surely would be a deterrent to any Russians or Chinese floating around the outside. So that,
well, they've elected in recent years to reduce this, the Pituffik base, isn't it? I think down from 6,000 down to about 150 at the moment. But are we not falling into the trap of looking for logic here? Because as I understand
probably.
I think the Financial Times had an article today or yesterday about how, getting the quotes, oil end quotes, out of Venezuela is going to be a very, very, very different project
exactly.
or prospect from anything that Trump understands. So I don't know whether or not the people around him want this kind of Western Hemisphere fortress. They're not really interested in the detail of what's deliverable, but the way you get Trump on board is by promising him baubles and prizes and shiny gold telephones. And that is what they've done. So, hey, Venezuela's full of oil, Mr. President. We really need to take out the president. Okay, let's do it, says Trump. And, oh, by the way, Greenland is full of minerals, and we really need those minerals. Okay, let's do it. So there could be two ambitions here, one illogical and one horribly logical.
Yeah, and I'm a very logical person, so it just... My blood pressure was going up and up, and I was yeah. as I was listening to your program, so I felt I had to make that.
No, I mean, Greenland I buy it 100%. The idea that it's going to be a hell of a lot more complicated than just turning up with a shovel or a few JCBs and shipping home all of these rare earth minerals same way that Venezuelan oil is notoriously difficult to harvest.
It's heavy. It's yes. heavy, difficult stuff to extract. But, you know, the Greenlandic people have not had a very good ride
no.
over the decades with Denmark as a nation. I lived in Denmark for 5 years, and I could sense and feel the racism towards Greenlandic people.
Really?
It's palpable. Not everybody, of course, but
no, of course.
Danes and so on have a very peculiar relationship with Denmark. And one person I remember saying, Greenland, all it's good for is sending tax revenues in Carlsberg.
So it could, yeah. I mean, a little bit like the... England's historic relationship with Ireland, maybe, that they just sort of looked askance over the sea, not the sea in this case, but...
A bit like that.
Yeah, and okay, I didn't know that.
The Greenlandic people, if they get benevolent companies or nations going towards them saying, hey guys, we'd love to do more with you, we'll put an infrastructure, we'll help you have schools, whatever it is, they would probably be welcome with open arms. And the conditions are there for anyone to go and do that, but very few companies
within the context of international law
exactly.
and treaties and borders and well, I mean that's a brilliant addition to our confusion, I suppose, in the idea that it doesn't decrease the likelihood of them trying to do to Greenland what they've done to Venezuela in different ways, but it does of course pose the question of whether or not 6 months, 2 years down the line, the action is going to have delivered any of the rewards and consequences that they undertook it on the promise of.
Yeah, and then I'm Icelandic by birth, and I live between the two countries. My name is actually Jón, but not John. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Actually, it does. Next time you ring in, I will call you Jón.
Thank you. And then us in Iceland, we look at this and thinking, Jesus, are we next?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like the wry chuckle there, but Iceland's not alone. And that's the point, isn't it? That's the question that Stephen Miller unintentionally poses when he says nobody's going to defend Greenland militarily, because I immediately start wondering, okay, well, who would we defend? What would we? Where would we defend militarily if American aggression were to move on to that next? And I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think you do either.
No, I don't. The only other point I'd like to make is
please.
Trump is serving a term, unless he changes the constitution and he's going to be king or whatever,
yeah.
is the next president, Republican or Democrat, going to look back on these 3 years and say, I'm terribly sorry, Europe, you can have Greenland back, and undo some of this stuff?
I think there'll be a lot of undoing if a Democrat gets in, but that presumes, A, that a Democrat will, B, that there'll be elections, and C, that Trump will quit the field. Of course, there's always a possibility that he would be replaced by J.D. Vance, who seems to be a sort of even more ridiculous figure, but arguably a brighter button, and equally committed to this Western Hemisphere domination. Well, what is it? Thank you, Jón. I really appreciate that. And it is yet more evidence of the power of contributions from people who've got intellectual or experiential investment in the issues that we're talking about, literally on the ground. Exploring Greenland, and therefore fully across the likelihood of the ease with which these valuable minerals could be extracted. But you do sort of, I kind of find yourself wondering whether or not the Vance project, the Miller project, is about perception. It's about the United States being all power. We can do whatever we want. I don't actually care what we do. All we care about is proving that we're allowed to do whatever we want. And how do you get Donald Trump to come along with it? You just promise him stuff. I love all the oil. I love the minerals. I asked Donald Trump what the chemical symbol is for any of the things that are currently lurking beneath the tundra in Greenland. And I suspect that you would be disappointed by his response. I asked Donald Trump the first thing about extracting heavy oil from Venezuela and turning it into money that he could spend. And you would, but it doesn't matter, does it? I'm back to Godfather 2 and that scene where the president of Cuba is given a gold telephone. He's absolutely delighted with it. It's Batista, I suppose, is it? Just before the revolution. You've got all the sugar companies, presumably some oil companies. And then you've got Michael Corleone, you've got the mafia, all sitting around the table, celebrating the fact that they've now got the president of an entire country doing everything they want him to do because they keep him so sweet. And they make him a gift of a gold telephone, and he loves it so much. You've seen the movie. He loves it so much, he passes it round the table. They all pass it round the table. Gets to Pacino, and he just kind of goes, yeah, all right, nice phone, but passes it on. But the rest of them are going, wow, this is the greatest phone. It's a bit like an Oval Office press conference. It's a bit like watching Donald Trump being interviewed on GB News. On a scale of 1 to 10, would you say that you're an 11 when it comes to good looks, Mr. President? On a scale, I mean, of all the presidents ever, JFK, Abraham Lincoln, FDR, would you say you were 10 times or 100 times better than all of the rest of them put together, Mr. President? Would you like a golden telephone, Mr. President? Would you like a whopping great ship full of Venezuelan oil, Mr. So, I don't know. I mean, we may never know. But it seems to me, and Jonah's really driven this point home, there are two things going on here. There is the, what would you call it, the ideological mission, and then there is the logical mission. There ain't no logical mission. But the ideological mission is what they're posting stuff from the Homeland Security account now that looks exactly like Nazi propaganda. We are all powerful and we can do whatever we want. The question remains at 11:49, can they? Can they really?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Many of you were and are still outraged by President Trump's action or the action that he authorised with those executive orders on the weekend and the taking of Nicolas Maduro. So where would you be if his ambitions were to extend to Greenland? Let's turn straight now to former Defence Secretary Conservative politician Sir Ben Wallace, who joins me now.
I think overall we're in a very dangerous territory. What I'm really worried about is this whole sense of we're now going to run another sovereign state. You know, that's what Putin does. That's Putin's justification for invading Ukraine.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that, I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
Unfold a world of on-the-go entertainment with the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 7. The massive 8-inch main screen means you'll see the bigger picture as every exciting moment unfolds. Share every highlight and keep the whole family entertained wherever you go. Buy yours now and claim £300 cash back. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 11:53. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's going to be hard. Forgive me if this is a little flippant, given the territory. It's going to be hard to know if, like me, you have television news channels on in your orbit, which don't have the sound on. Obviously, I don't have the sound on. I could read the subtitles, but it would look weird. And also, I'd get distracted. It's going to be hard in the next few days to know whether the report that you're seeing in the background, or the report that I'm seeing in the background in the studio, is coming from Greenland, or whether it's a weather reporter somewhere in the United Kingdom. Off the top of my head, I don't have at my fingertips, and I know it's much, much colder in Greenland, but it could be Stoke-on-Trent looking a bit frosty. Or it could be Sky News international correspondent reporting live from the front line of where the United States may put boots on the ground in Greenland. I just thought I'd mention that because I sometimes think that you don't fully appreciate how hard it is to do this job every day. So that's what I'm going to be dealing with in the coming days. Is that the local news bloke from the Midlands Today programme on the ground in Stoke-on-Trent? Or is that actually a report on the first sightings of American troops arriving in Greenland with the intention of invading sovereign territory? Of course, I probably wouldn't be able to see them because they'd be wearing their camouflage suits. That's one way you know, because the reporter wouldn't be wearing a camouflage suit. They'd be wearing very similar outfits, probably high vis. And if you're just joining us, that joint statement from various leaders, European leaders, is up. I'm sure it's up on the LBC website if you want to read it yourself. Do you know what Eleanor's just said? She says, you can't get camouflage. It's not going to work in snow, is it? There's specific camouflage designed for snow, Eleanor. I know this because I am very military. I'm very well qualified. Yeah, as Keith says, it's mostly white. 11:55 is the time. A couple more calls on this question of NATO, the future, and Greenland. Just the little stuff today. Mark is in Milan. Mark, what would you like to say?
Yeah, by the way, don't worry about him knowing the elements. He's going to rename the whole periodic table and prefix it with Trump.
Trumpium. I have a brooch Trumpium. Of purest Trumpium. I think you might be right there.
Exactly. No doubt about that. Anyway, listen, as I was saying to your producer before, it's about time we stop talking on this. The first thing we should do is call a joint European military exercise with our Arctic warfare capability, and drop about 500 troops from, let's say, the Alpines in Italy, 4-5 Commando in Britain, the Danes, the Finns. Just drop them in there, a couple of thousand, to do a European exercise.
Yeah.
Just put them on the ground. And that's just rather...
And they're allowed to, of course. I mean, you know, Greenland and Danish permissions notwithstanding, that would be an entirely fair exercise.
Yeah, it's European. It's nothing to do with NATO. We keep NATO out of it. We keep well away the 500 troops that they've got there in North...
They're all American, are they? They're all American.
Yeah. They're all Yanks. It's a bit like at Mildenhall. I think there's only one RAF personnel on base, and that's just to do with the fact that you have to keep the flag up.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but apart from that, so that's what I would do, is because you've got to show these people a deterrent, because right now we're appeasing him. He doesn't care about these letters. He doesn't give one single damn. I doubt he could even read it, or he'll have somebody'd have to read it for him.
So the President of France, the Chancellor of Germany, the Prime Minister of Italy, Poland, Spain, UK, Denmark, they are uniting to tell us in diplomatic terms to wind our neck in sovereignty, territorial integrity, inviolability of borders. These are universal principles and we will not stop defending them. And Stephen Miller and therefore by proxy Donald Trump respond by simply saying, whose army? Yes.
Well, like I say, if we put one, you can pull this together in about 2 to 3 months. The Danes could have troops right over there. Now we just fund it. So they put 1,000 troops on there.
Do you think they will?
Territory.
Do you think they will?
I know they won't, because everything, blessed are the peacemakers, but this isn't the time. You've got to stand up to this bully.
Do you think they will?
I hope so.
Yeah, and we all hope
this is a military exercise. It's nothing to do with NATO. It's European Arctic
Well, that was Helder. Helder, ex-NATO forces. Helder reminded us that in many ways NATO broke the minute he said we need Greenland, because all of the people serving alongside each other were rendered potential enemies that day.
Yeah,
for the first time since 1945.
Yeah. That's it. It's easy. And it could be pulled together. It'd take a 2 to 3 months, but if we could get the Danes and the Finns out there now, and then within another month, and we'll have a massive exercise, and they are there on the pretext of preparing the ground for the exercise that's going to happen.
And we all talk as if this is a temporary aberration, or that it's being exaggerated and things will return to normal, and it was the same with Ukraine. It still is the same with defending Ukraine, as if a future American administration would step back up to the plate. And I don't know. I mean, all the talk of a new world order that was popular among racist Twitter a while ago for completely different reasons is happening now from the opposite end of the political spectrum, a world order in which America is unreliable, unsafe and unpleasant. And Europe is not necessarily, as Mark reminds us, waking up to that problem yet. When I say post-45, I mean, of course, the post-war settlement. NATO itself didn't come around for 4 or 5 years more. It's coming up to 12 noon. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, we'll move on now from Greenland, but not from Europe. Those two headlines I shared with you at 10 o'clock, yesterday's newspapers reporting the same story. Closer ties to EU single market, preferable to customs union, PM says, quite correctly in my view. But of course, if you were viewing this moment through the lens of the insanity that still dominates the editorial floor at the Daily Mail, you'd have read above the same story, Starmer's new Brexit betrayal as he plots return to the single market. I'm not quite sure what my question is yet for the next hour, but it will be something along the lines of, does anybody have the first idea what it is about Brexit that could possibly be betrayed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, European leaders have rallied behind Greenland after President Trump doubled down on threats to annex the Danish territory. Mr. Trump has repeatedly raised the prospect of taking over the semi-autonomous island on national security grounds. The leaders of France, Germany and the UK have just released a joint statement saying it's for Greenland to decide on matters concerning them. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, that Sir Keir Starmer needs to be more robust on the issue.
What I really want to see from Keir Starmer is some strength. He just looks weak. He looks like he doesn't know what's going on. President Trump hasn't called him. He's not in the room. I know he's organising some meetings with EU leaders later, but he's having meetings but has got nothing to say.
Do you think that an invasion of Greenland or any sort of incursion would spell the end of NATO? Do you fear that?
It would be terrible for NATO, certainly NATO as we know it. So we have to make sure we do everything we can to stop anything like that from happening and keep NATO together.
Swiss authorities say the bar where 40 people died in a fire on New Year's Day hadn't had any safety checks for 5 years. The mayor of Crans-Montana says inspections will now be carried out at all 128 local venues. Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived for talks in Paris aimed at ending the conflict with Russia. The French President Emmanuel Macron is hosting leaders from 30 nations, including Sir Keir Starmer and a delegation from the United States. The Health Secretary says the new online hospital service in England will fast-track care and cut wait times. Wes Streeting says patients will be able to speak to doctors over an upgraded NHS app from next year. Severe menopause and endometriosis conditions are among those that will be prioritised. Mr. Streeting has told LBC that technology won't replace face-to-face healthcare.
It might be about ease and convenience. It might be about better productivity, freeing up staff time so they're not spending loads of time on admin or form filling. Also, it frees up clinicians' time to do the things that really matter when it comes to patient care. So I see technology as an assistant, as a co-pilot, as an enabler, rather than as a replacement, certainly in health and social care.
And the UK could be hit by the first named storm of the year later this week. The French Meteorological Service say Storm Goretti is expected on Thursday. Overnight, the UK felt its coldest night of the winter so far, with temperatures reaching lows of minus 12. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 68 at 10,073. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying very cold today, but dry for most. Snow showers for central and northern England and the west of Scotland with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. I can tell that that is not actually Greenland because it's Kemi Badenoch being interviewed, but it is apparently snowing in the background, and I've just received word that it's snowing outside this studio in London's fashionable Leicester Square. So, snow watch. Snow watch. Will it settle? Do you remember when you were kids? We used to say, will it settle, though? Will it settle? That's what we said in Kidderminster. So did you say something else elsewhere? We say, will it stay? Someone say, will it stay? Will it? We used to say settle. Did you say settle? We always say, will it settle? Will it settle? Where's the best place? Let's do a phone-in on tobogganing. Should we do a phone-in on where's the best places to go tobogganing? But we're a national station now. When I started at LBC, we were London-based. Now we're national, and as the last couple of hours proved, we're also pretty international. Imagine if Jon rang back on the best places to go sledging. He grew up in Iceland. I don't think we can do... I think that might be a tiny bit too parochial. And do you know, somebody once came into the studio, and the person that had arranged the interview told me that they had been reluctant to appear on this radio station because they thought it was too parochial. I was obviously quite good friends with the PR, which the celebrity in question didn't realise. If I told you, I gave you one little clue, that this, I may have told you in the past, actually, the truth about this, but I can't remember telling you. The celebrity in question got into quite a lot of bother over the holiday period. And I wonder, and I'll just do it on text, and I'll tell you if you have guessed correctly. Will it stick, you say, in Lancashire? Will it pitch, Phil? You don't say where you're from. Will it settle? Will it stick? I quite like that. Will it lie? I think that might be the Scottish one. I'll tell you this. The celebrity in question who had the audacity to describe LBC as a little bit too parochial for him, there's another clue, got into quite a lot of bother over the Christmas period. And I'll let you know if you guess correctly, but I won't say who it... Well, shall I say who it was on air? I could do, actually, couldn't I? Well, I mean, there's no reason why I shouldn't. It's hardly libelous. He didn't want to come on. He thinks LBC's too parochial. Can you guess who that was? They got into quite a little bit of trouble over the Christmas period. Just a little teaser for you. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. I've got a missing word round for you as well, but I just need to check with Eleanor that we think that... should we do that one that we were talking about? Are we sure no one will mind? Do you want to check? Should we check? Should we check, actually, just check personally? Well, no, because that's kind of giving it away now. Anyway, speaking of Eleanor, Corksy's been in touch about her bafflement at the existence of Arctic camouflage to say, of course Eleanor has never seen winter camouflage. This just proves how effective it is. It's not even the end of the second show of the year, and we may already have had the best joke of 2026. We've certainly had several contenders for the best call of 2026. Catherine in snowy London has guessed correctly. Quite a few of you have... because I told you he'd got into trouble over the Christmas period. You're not guessing it on the grounds of him being the kind of person who might be snooty enough to describe LBC as parochial. But yes, quite a few of you are getting it correct. Well done. It wasn't him, and... I want to turn your attention next to the closer ties with the EU single market that Keir Starmer has called for. Now, I don't know whether we can do this yet in 2026. Have a sensible conversation about the fact that this is simply inevitable. That the idiotic decision to leave the European Union... Well, idiotic in 90% of circumstances. If you honestly believe that sovereignty is worth more than... I don't know. I don't, but the not pooling sovereignty, that sharing is awful. If you honestly believe that sharing is awful, then I guess you can just about sustain the idea that leaving the single market was a good idea. You can just about sustain that idea. I don't care if I'm going to be poorer. I don't care if everything's going to be worse. At least I won't have to share what I've got. In this case, sovereignty. But everybody else knows that it was a really stupid thing to do. And indeed, everybody who still thinks that sovereignty is some sacred thing that must be protected at all costs should, by rights, be up in arms about what Donald Trump is up to at the moment, not just in Greenland, but technically also in Venezuela. But anyway, that's a conversation for another day. The conversation for today is this. Keir Starmer has spoken of his desire to have closer ties with the EU single market. Here is a mark of how bent and broken this country... Well, actually, I can't say that because I'm a little bit guilty of what I'm about to describe myself. Who here... This could almost be a question for the phone-in. Who here... could confidently and correctly, because if we learn anything from the Brexit debate, it is the importance of aligning correctness with confidence, because people could confidently claim all sorts of things. Like, we need them, they need us more than we need them, or 250 billion, million, zillion, trillion pounds for the air, or whatever else it was. All sorts of very confident claims. We've had enough of experts, said Michael Gove. Very confident claims, all entirely incorrect. Everything Jacob Rees-Mogg says has an air of confidence to it, and everything Jacob Rees-Mogg says eventually turns out to be absolutely stupid. Never more so than in the context of Brexit. So how many of us could confidently and correctly describe the difference between a single market and a customs union? We did it a lot back in the day, but even I, James O. Brexit, as I was known during some of that era, even I still struggle to remember exactly what the difference is between a customs union and a single market. In the context of the EU, they both, of course, facilitate free trade. The customs union gets rid of all tariffs and quotas, whereas the single market removes non-tariff barriers on goods, such as rules on packaging, food standards and safety, which means that if you are permitted into, and there's no guarantee that you would be, the sort of single market purview, then as long as you manufacture and label everything within their rules, then you could sell it straight into the European Union or buy directly from the European Union without any problems or difficulties. Are you clear? Is that any clearer than you? Yeah, the problem is with the single market is that you can't separate the four freedoms. You cannot have a free movement of goods without having a free movement of people. Ditto services and capital. So I'm a little bit confused about what Keir Starmer is talking about here when he describes himself as wanting even closer alignment with the single market. If it's in our national interest, then we should consider that. We should go that far. The customs union, you can join without being in the European Union, without being in hock to the four freedoms, as it were, without being subject to the four freedoms. But he seems to think that's too big a move to make. So what you'd be looking at is more dynamic alignment between food and drink on the deal that was agreed in May. You can hear the anger from the Daily Mail from space. If you were to ask them what they were angry about, they wouldn't be able to tell you. They would have to say at some point that, well, we're angry about the fact that British manufacturers will be voluntarily following guidelines that are set in Brussels. To which the only intelligent response is, of course, that they already are. You can probably tell, I'm not 100% sure which way to go on this phone-in. I mean, if I say, do you welcome closer ties to the single market, you might ring in and display perhaps a lack of understanding of what it actually means. But the words closer ties are what we respond to. Starmer calling for closer ties. So I'm going to... Well, you can bring it into the conversation if you want. But I think that the finer detail of it is going to be secondary to the question that I ask. I suggested to you, not long after Keir Starmer became Prime Minister, that it would be a mistake for two or three reasons to talk about moving closer to the European Union. Not rejoining, but it would be a mistake, A, because the mad sirens of the right-wing media would start screaming all sorts of lies and nonsense again. The narrative of betrayal, albeit that it was as bogus as the reasons for leaving, would still be powerful. It would still hold sway over British voters. Reason number two was that the European Union will not be welcoming us back anytime soon for the very simple reason that we are no way close to being a country that is stable and sensible enough to provide the kind of guarantees that they would need. In other words, are you going to try and come out again after the next election? So the arguments against him calling for rejoining remain powerful. Some of them are built upon logic, as in what the European Union would do. Some of them are built upon emotion, as in what the right-wing media and the liars and various weirdos who populate the Reform Party and increasingly the Tory Party would do and say. That's built on emotion. One is built on fact, one is built on emotion, but they combine to create reasons why Keir Starmer would be wrong to talk about moving closer to Europe. And then reason number three was us. Those of us who understand how inevitable it is that we will move closer to Europe, how necessary it is that we will move closer to Europe, how likely it will be to come up with one of our greatest hits from yesteryear, that we introduce something called liberty of motion, which is absolutely nothing like freedom of movement, but which allows people to move freely into this country. We can't, of course, insist on being able to move freely into their countries because we've left the rulemaking body. But we are going to need people, not least because of the demographic change that is this year going to see deaths overtake births in this country and quite likely see immigration reach net zero. So the population is going to fall at a time when the need for younger adults to look after older adults is going to be increasing exponentially. All of this was predicted. I told you all of this was going to happen. It's happening a little bit sooner than I expected. But the need for foreign workers to come here is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger with every passing year from about July of 2026. I made up July. I just wanted to sound clever. So from 2026, that looks like being ground zero for this demographic shift that I told you was coming and which many people knew exactly what they were doing when they voted for it. But I think I might have been wrong. It's quite odd that Starmer is now making noises about moving closer, moving away from Brexit and towards the European Union. I don't know how important the detail is to you in this, because I think the detail dilutes the moment. I think the more you understand and look at the detail, the more rhetorical this seems, as opposed to substantive. But rhetoric is really important. He is talking warmly about moving away from Brexit towards the European Union, whether the customs market or the customs union or, as he prefers at the moment, the single market. And what I want to know from you is whether you think the time is right, whether Starmer can and indeed should now start talking more warmly and more honestly about Europe, about the European Union, about, in this case, the single market. Is the time right? 0345 6060 973. And the second question, which is a little bit more dispiriting for those of us who recognise the inevitability of this, is it going to make any difference at all? So Keir Starmer, sounding warmer than ever, and I'll play you a little clip of him talking to Natasha yesterday in a moment. Keir Starmer sounding warmer than he has done previously as Prime Minister about moving closer to Europe. Is it time to do? Is it the right time to do it? 0345 6060 973. And then the detail-based question is, will it make any difference when he talks about aligning on food and agriculture? If we're not members of the customs union, What does that actually mean? I'm pretty good on this, as you know, on Brexit. I don't think I've been wrong about anything yet. And that's not a boast. I wish I had been, because I'm patriotic, and I hate the fact that we slap ourselves in the face on a daily basis, and in some cases still celebrate it. I'll have a little look at Idiot's Corner during the break and see if we've got any on the line today. Still celebrating, making us poorer, making us weaker, making us less secure. Imagine listening to 2 hours of conversation about the necessity of European unity and strength, and then still thinking that leaving the European Union was a good idea. That's the level of stupid that you're dealing with. But is it time and or right for Keir Starmer to signal movement back towards the European Union? So the rhetoric of it, the emotion of it, 03456060973, and then, of course, the facts and the detail of it. What difference will it make? What does it even mean when he talks about aligning more on food and agriculture? What does it even mean? Because I don't think that we're going to be able, even if we abide by every single rule that the European Union country has enacted on food and agriculture, we're not going to be able to export what is produced in this country into the European Union without checks. I don't think you can have that free movement of goods without having free movement of people or free movement of services or free movement of capital. So you can't say we're going to have free movement. That's the bit I don't get. That may be a quibble too far. Let's find out. Do you welcome Keir Starmer's move? 03456060973. And what will it mean? It is 12:19.
This is LBC.
Water. It doesn't get nearly enough credit. You drink it, you grow your dinner with it, you wash your bits with it. You surf on it like some kind of levitating wizard. Yes, water is the greatest. Without it, Earth would be just another dry, crusty cosmic fail, like Mars. Think about it. Everything you know and love starts with water. Your dog, your car, your internet, which is basically just a load of sweaty computers kept cool in a bath. And then there is just a small miracle of keeping us alive. Without drinking water, you wouldn't survive more than 3 days. Some mates take longer to text you back. So, let's raise a glass to clean water. It's hard to imagine life without it. Seriously, how is it that 1 million people die every year because they lack access to clean water? That's not just unthinkable. That's wrong. Donate to WaterAid today. Just £2 a month can give life-changing clean water.
In a world where innovation meets style, there's a new name on the road. And right now, families like yours are discovering a car brand that values you. Feel the future in motion as the Emotify petrol and E5 electric blend next-level technology with real family life. With state-of-the-art features like wireless mobile phone charging as standard, say hello to a car that fits your lifestyle and your future, starting from £23,990. Book your test drive online now. Search Emota to find your nearest dealer. Emota. Value everything.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 20 minutes after 12. Have a listen to Keir Starmer talking to Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, yesterday about why he is, I think doing something that a year ago would have been unthinkable, talking more warmly about moving closer to the European Union. And then we'll have a chat about whether or not you welcome this intervention, and crucially, perhaps, whether or not it will mean anything, apart from all the usual idiots like Farage talking about betrayal. Betraying what? What does betrayal mean? Do they even know what it says in the dictionary? All the things that they were told they were voting for by people like Farage and Johnson and Rees-Mogg haven't happened. The betrayal came from the Brexiters. If you vote for this, if you vote for X, you will get Y. And you got diddly squat, or you got the opposite of why. So how can the betrayal be undertaken by the people who are trying to undo the consequences of the lies that you told? What is a Brexit betrayal? Oh, a Brexit betrayal is, oh, we didn't come out of it better off than we went in. A Brexit betrayal is, oh, it turns out they didn't need us more than we needed them. A Brexit betrayal is, oh, do you know what? The German car companies didn't all arrive at the negotiating table the next day to give us whatever we wanted. The Brexit betrayal would be claiming that there's no way they're going to treat us like every other third country on the planet because we are Britannia. Britannia rules the waves. Britannia waves the rules. The Brexit betrayal came from all the people who made promises about Brexit that have already been proven to be false. It did not come from the people who told the truth and have been proven to be right. But that doesn't necessarily answer the question of whether Keir Starmer is doing the right thing at the right time. Too little, too late? Too much, too soon? You tell me. Here he is talking to Natasha yesterday.
We've aligning on food and agriculture. I won't go into the details, but what I'll tell you is what the result will be is that lower food prices in supermarkets. I think for many people, they'd say, I've got to pay my energy bills, I've got to get around my transport to work, to family, to health appointments, but I'm also worried about my food bills. So with a closer alignment, which is our choice as a sovereign country with the EU, we're able to bring those prices down. Now, this is why I say 2026 is about turning the corner, because it was last year we struck that agreement, but it'll be this year that we implement it. And actually, people feel the difference. That's on top of other measures that we've been able to announce today. Freezing rail fares, for example, first time in 30 years. For lots of people going through Reading Station this morning on the way to London, that season ticket will be £340 less than it might otherwise have been. For everybody on their energy bills, £150 off their energy bills in April, every single household. And for the poorest households, that's on top of the £150 that we've already taken off those bills. Because I'm conscious that whilst I'm getting a lot of questions about international affairs, understandably, and global events are moving at a very fast pace, I'm conscious that across Berkshire and across the country, in the end, the single most important thing is the cost of living and people wanting to feel, do I feel better off? Do I feel comfortable I can actually pay my bills? And I'm never going to lose sight of that as the number one priority.
And is it worth it for our listeners to pay more to Brussels in order to feel a better cost of living benefit back at home, do you think?
Well, nobody's talking about paying more to Brussels. We're talking about taking the sovereign decision, the democratic decision in this country, as to whether it makes sense to align some of our standards. We believe in high standards. I mean, when it comes to food and agriculture, I don't get many people saying to me, can we lower our standards? We're quite proud of the fact we have high standards. So I'm pleased about that. And I want to make sure when people go into their supermarket, they begin to see prices coming down.
Okay, I'll be honest with you. I'm confused. I'm really confused because I don't understand what he's announcing. Do you? People who are currently producing goods that fall below European Union standards don't really exist, despite the best efforts of Tufton Street and Jacob Rees-Mogg wanting your children to eat beef that had been injected with all sorts of antibiotics or chlorinated chicken, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that was the alternative. That's all that was ever really on offer from Brexiters was cheap shoes for peasants, as Jacob Rees-Mogg never said. But chlorinated chicken and hormone-injected beef, all of these things that haven't really happened. What is he... What's he actually announcing here? An alignment on... Well, someone in food and agriculture can help me. 0345 6060973. But if there's not a lot of detail, if there's not a lot of substance, do we still welcome the rhetoric, the shift, the clutching of the nettle, actually? That the deliberate and public movement towards Brussels and away from the nonsense and the lies of Brexit. And if anyone wants to have a go at having describing what Brexit betrayal means in the tiny minds of Brexiters, then I'd welcome your contribution as well. Matthew is in Woking. Matthew, what do you reckon?
Hey, James. Happy New Year.
Same to you, mate.
I think, personally, no matter what, I mean, Keir there on his speech, I don't know, just the first time I'd heard that, he was trying to underline the good policies he'd done, you know, with the rail fares and the grocery shopping and that. But no matter how many good policies he might or his government might bring in, they're only going to get completely trashed by the right-wing media anyway.
Yes.
So I think...
Well, I can read you the headline. Shall I read you the headline? Starmer's new Brexit betrayal as he plots a return to the single market. And I don't know what paragraph, I'll bet you 50 quid they quote Nigel Farage. Other party leader. Yeah, here you go. Reform UK's Nigel Farage said Starmer's Brexit betrayal is a breach of good faith with Labour voters. I don't know what he's talking about, but spoiler alert, nor does he. So that's a given. They will attack it without knowing what they're attacking or why, but they will just attack it because Brexit, scarf, neck, knot.
Yeah, so that is a given. So to say he's got putting all his eggs in one basket with Europe, I think it's his only basket left. If he's got any inclination to be Prime Minister after the next election, I think personally, he has got to learn, because people have been saying, well, Starmer previously was not a Brexiteer, but he's not taking us back to Europe. I think he's got a 3-year sort of plan, coming up to the next election, to make the next election a sort of referendum too, to go, look, do you really want to lurch further to the right with this lot over here, with Farage and the Tories, or do you want us to have close alignment with Europe, with Labour, and the people who can't vote for Labour, who won't actually be able to physically bring themselves to vote for Labour, will have to vote for the Liberals.
If they sat down in Downing Street and made a list of things that are possible and positive, there wouldn't be a lot on it. But moving closer to Brussels, moving closer to the European Union shouldn't really substitute the word European Union for the word Brussels. That's a little bit tabloidy. But the moving closer to the European Union would be on that list.
I think that's his only soapbox left. Because, as I said, no matter what policy he brings in, people are just, I've got people around me who are bold new working class people who are just going, oh, he's the worst prime minister we've ever had. And I'm like, what are you basing that on? They're going, well, he's done this and he's done that. I'm like, but that's not true. That's just rubbish in the media. So no matter what he does, what his appeal is, I think his only appeal that's going to go
something that feels meaningful.
Political persuasions,
yes,
is something that's like, I will take us back towards Europe, and if you vote for me, I'll knock on the door and see if we've got half a chance of getting back in a few years' time. Or you can vote for that lot and you can lurch further away from Europe forever, because it was, it was a close vote, the Brexit vote, as we all know. And you only need 5% of people to change their minds, just like I did. I'm one of the 5%.
Are you?
And he'd be like, well, the public would be like, do we really want to lurch further away from Europe, or do we actually think our future is being aligned with Europe?
And then under your reading, the detail doesn't matter that much, because I'm not entirely sure. It could be a sort of Swiss-style sector-by-sector arrangement, and if we join the customs union, it would mean that some of the deals we've signed, I mean, relatively meaningless though they are, I suppose India might be, no one would miss the Australian trade deal except the Australians, but India and to a lesser extent the United States, potentially we'd have to pull out of those if we wanted to go into the customs union. So that would be a much bigger challenge, a much bigger ask. I don't know what it would actually involve in terms of detail and substance, aligning more closely with the European Union. Someone else might tell us later, but even if it didn't mean much, it would somehow change the music. It would change the... So you think it would be effective? This is now what the people want.
He doesn't have to detail exactly what he'd do. It'd be like, I'm gonna bring us back in line with Europe. Yes, we're not going to... we won't be joining for a long, long time, if at all, but, we want to be closely aligned with them, because we're certainly not aligned with America anymore.
Yeah, and nor would we want to be, actually, for the foreseeable future. That was never really a viable alternative to membership of the single market anyway, the idea that we could go off and, as a small island in the middle of an ocean, we'd go off and do deals with much further away countries that would somehow replace the deals that we had in place, the deal, full singular, that we had in place with, as members of the biggest single market in the history of humanity. I don't know, I'm glad that we've got the question distinguishing between substance and style, if you like, message and content. Do you welcome Keir Starmer essentially saying, we want more Europe? And is it time? I thought it would be another electoral cycle before he could do this. I thought he would have to win a second election, which looks far from likely at the moment, certainly far from certain, before he could start making warmer noises about the European Union. You know that the people who've been proved wrong about everything, from the editorial floor of the Daily Mail right through to Nigel Farage, are going to start whining about betrayal and nonsense like that. That's a given. But for the rest of us, those of us who recognise the inevitability of it, or those of us who didn't but do now, is the time right? Is the time right for Starmer to start making much warmer noises about the European Union? 12:32 is the time. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Sir Keir Starmer needs to be more robust in response to threats from Donald Trump to annex Greenland. France, Germany and the UK have released a joint statement rallying behind the Danish territory to determine its own future. Authorities in Switzerland have revealed the bar where 40 people died in a fire on New Year's Day hadn't had safety checks for 5 years. The mayor of the Crans-Montana ski resort says inspections will now be carried out at all 128 venues. And more snow has brought a second day of school closures and travel disruption after temperatures fell to -12.5 degrees overnight. The coldest night of the winter so far was recorded in Marham in Norfolk. LBC weather, bright in southern England this afternoon, cloudy elsewhere with patches of rain and snow, heavy snow showers in some parts of northern Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
What would you do if you found a way to make endless money? In a damp flat in Blackpool, James Parker did just that. He discovered a way to make Bitcoin out of thin air, and it made him rich beyond his wildest dreams. But that's when the trouble started. Join me, Lewis Goodall, for my new podcast, Coining It, the true story of a man who found a crack in the system and created a fortune that tore lives apart. Listen for free on Global Player, download it from the App Store, or head to globalplayer.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 12:35. Again, I'm fascinated, as you know, by historians of the future and what they will say about our era, what they will say about the era that we live in. Looking at the potential collapse of the post-war order in Europe that Donald Trump is currently effecting, and the fact that some people saw it from a mile off, and indeed the role that Russia has played in destabilizing Europe and destabilizing the United States, would leave you open to ridicule until relatively recently, even though to those of us on board, it was blindingly obvious what was going on. I wonder when historians of the future will where they'll put the pendulum on the British public realizing that leaving the European Union was an act of absolute idiocy. I don't personally think we're there yet. I know the opinion poll suggests that we are, but if you got the full weight of the mad media behind the betrayal narrative, then I'm afraid. And of course, if the bot farms and the Facebook manipulations and the Cambridge Analytica successors were up and running and very, very well funded again, then those numbers would change again. You'd have the same lies or variations on the old lies still out there. And therefore, the numbers that are now in favour of rejoining or undoing that ludicrous decision in 2016 would change again. I don't think the pendulum has reached is apex the right word? Where the desire to undo has reached critical mass. Which is why I think it's an interesting question to ask whether Keir Starmer is politically right to be moving closer to the European Union. 0345 6060 973. There's not really a debate about whether or not it's the right thing to do ultimately, because of course it is. And I fully respect you in a way if you think that it isn't, that we shouldn't be, and that it was a good idea to leave the European Union. But we can both agree you're entirely unable to back up your own arguments with anything other than feelings, emotions, and words that you don't fully understand the meaning of, like sovereignty. So that's just boring radio. You can ring in and shout sovereignty at me or tell me how much you hate foreigners. That's great. But I know that view. I know that song. I know how that story ends. Everybody sufficiently informed to have a valid opinion recognises that leaving the European Union was a really stupid thing to do. Whether you realise it at the time or not doesn't matter. You realise it now. But politically, is it still too soon for Keir Starmer to be doing what he has done in the last couple of days? Kieran's in Hemel Hempstead. Kieran, what would you like to say?
Happy New Year, James.
Thank you, mate. You too.
Right. It's quite complicated, but I hope it makes sense.
Well, you're going to have a crack at the second question. You're going to tell us what it means, the increased alignment.
Right.
Right, drum roll.
From the 1st of January, a few days ago, the French have gradually been rolling out what's called ICS2. It's an import system that every driver has to fill out, declaring every single thing they have in the back of their vehicle. It has to be accompanied with the accompanying commodity code. You then have to do a tick box saying, are you carrying animal or food or plants or anything like that? And that ICS2 has to then go off to France. It then has to be accepted by the French douane. It's then sent back to you. You either get a rejection or you get an acceptance. Now, that can take up to 24 hours.
Okay.
Bearing in mind, the driver has to do this and cannot leave the country until this piece of paper is done. Don't forget all the MRNs and T1s and carnets and everything you've already done to get your goods cleared through the customs in the first place. This new ICS2...
So it's an extra layer of bureaucracy. For people who don't know, Kieran, this is what you do for a living. And if I sound a little bit, up myself when I point out that I haven't got anything wrong about Brexit, compared to you, I am scrappy-doo compared to your Scooby-Doo, because every single thing you told us about what was going to happen to people on whatever scale, importing, exporting between the United Kingdom and the European Union, every single syllable that you shared with us over the years that we spoke regularly has come to pass. So if there is a gospel, it is the gospel according to Kieran the van driver, as you rather modestly term yourself. So that, I just want people, because I don't think that Rebecca, who answered the phone, was aware of your status in the history of this program, Kieran. No, it's not fine. You must wear your crown and you must wear it with pride. So you haven't been wrong yet.
James, I'm just a normal working person paying a mortgage, earning my money and paying my bills. Doing a job.
Aren't we all, mate? Yeah,
exactly.
Aren't we
going? Anyway, I digress. So, the ICS2, most importantly, is to monitor what's going into the European Union. I don't know whether you remember me years ago, literally was years ago now, saying when we left the Single Market and Customs Union and you start striking new trade deals around the world, you end up having a new set of regulations on what you import into the UK through trade deals, and you import things that necessarily are not allowed or banned in the European Union. Now,
yes.
ICS2, which is predominantly aimed at the UK, because there's not many external borders around the European Union that import in. Turkey is actually quite close to the lines of what we are, but basically they want to know what's crossing the international border. So ICS2 is a declaration of what you're carrying with a commodity code, and you're physically ticking a box stating that you're not carrying certain meat, food, or animal products or plants. And then you can be fined up to €3,700 for a missed declaration of anything they find in the back, and you can be open to a manual inspection. Now, I'm not finished yet. Once you've got your ICS2 declaration back from France and it's been cleared, you then have to put it onto what's called an ELO, which is an envelope for the French, which is a master barcode, which then enables you to travel. And you have to put the ICS2 declaration down on the ELO, which enables you to travel. And that's on top of the UK GMR that you already have to do to get onto the train or the boat. So you have three sets of paperwork now that you have to do 24 hours in advance for anything leaving this country. And I think it's absolute coincidence that Keir Starmer has come out and said he wants closer alignment now because he might well be aware of the new rules.
You'd hope he'd be aware of them. I mean, this is all the reduced red tape that every... So the people who are talking about Brexit betrayal today promised less red tape, right? And you've just described a massive increase in red tape. So I don't know where the traitor is in that narrative.
James,
go on.
I sat there on New Year's Eve for about 6 hours when I should have been enjoying myself, doing my stuff to go out on New Year's Day. I sat there all day yesterday.
How many hours would it have taken in 2015?
Well, it wouldn't.
I'm making radio. It's theatre, Kieran. Theatre. Let's do that again. Let's do that. How many hours would it have taken in 2015, Kieran?
Zero.
Whoa! So they voted for less red tape and they got loads more. Bless them.
But this is quite interesting because Keir Starmer says he wants to be more closely aligned with the single market and the customs union, right?
Well, not the customs union, just the single market. What do you think that means? Does it mean anything?
Well, the single market, as we all know, we used to talk about, was the free movement of goods, people, services, and capital.
The indivisible.
The customs union. The customs union aligns you with everything that goes in. Switzerland isn't in the customs union, but neither is Norway.
Yeah, but it does have a sector-by-sector arrangement with the single market.
Yes, it does. And
so that's what he's talking about.
Yes, maybe. But Switzerland and Norway do not have this new red tape that we have. They do not have ICS2 and ELO.
Okay. So there is a sort of membership light almost option there.
Yeah, I mean...
Do we know why don't they have it? Because they have their sector-by-sector arrangements in place.
Yes.
This is basically mutual recognition, in a way, is the best way of describing it, regulatory alignment, mutual recognition, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, I mean, the Swiss, they've got their own regulations of what you're allowed to bring into Switzerland, they can check if you've got any meat or food products, and you're allowed a certain allowance of what you can bring in. But at the end of the day, it comes down to having a mutual understanding and recognition on each other's side that you can trust each other. And I think...
Okay, so that is that then... Too. Yeah, all right, then you're selling it to me as something that Keir Starmer can both achieve and promote successfully. Do you agree?
Yes, I welcome anything that brings us closer because it's going to make it exporting especially out of this country, which has become a hell of a lot harder. It will make it a lot... It'll make it easier. Don't get me wrong. You're still going to have to do your T1.
And the crucial thing to understand is the difference between greater alignment with the single market as opposed to membership of the single market.
Yes, exactly that. And the ICS2 is all about... It's all about standards.
I love it.
And they want to know what's coming in.
You're still famous, you know. Loads of people delighted to hear your voice. I'm particularly on a personal level, Kieran. I'm delighted to hear you sounding so chipper.
Nah, thanks, James. It was good. I thought I had to ring in. I was on the M25 when you rang me.
Of course you were.
I got into Hemel Hempstead and I pulled over into a lay-by. I thought, I've got to ring you and share all the new pain that I have to endure every week now to go through. And every time I go onto my Mac and I start doing... And incidentally...
Go on, then.
Incidentally, all of this stuff that I do is only in French. From the Douane.
Sacre bleu. Crème de Mons, Rodney. and as I said before, every single syllable, toutes les syllables that Kieran has shared with us from his work in precisely this field has been proven right. In fact, if you were to take Kieran as your North Star, then your South Star would be Jacob Rees-Mogg. Every single thing Kieran said would happen with regard to Brexit has come to pass. Every single thing Jacob Rees-Mogg said would happen has not. That's a slightly broad brushstroke, but you take my point. So pay attention to what he has told you and join me in welcoming Keir Starmer's intervention. I've got a first class. I was going to do an unhinged headline, but I've decided that it's going to be a missing words round instead. So the first missing words round of 2026 is as follows. Blank blanks. Car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals. Once again, with feeling. Blank blanks. Car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals. What on earth could the blanks be in this Telegraph? I presume the website. Surely it's not going to make the actual print edition, this kind of bilge. There's a clue there. Blank blanks, car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals. Can you fill in the blanks?
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
If we say it's ours, it's ours. President Trump's chief of staff puts Greenland on notice in stark terms. And a photographer remembers January the 6th Capitol riots in Washington.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video. The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with the new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders ends 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. I would say it's approximately 70% wrong answers, 25%, no, hang on, 70% the same wrong answer, 25% correct answer, and then 5% different wrong answers from the 70% wrong answer. This in response to the question of what words are missing from the following headline. Blank blanks, car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals. And the answer is not James O'Brien, as most of you thought. No, I don't. The answer is Lewis Goodall. Lewis Goodall's car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals, according to someone called Brendan O'Neill, writing in the Daily Telegraph. Because as far as I could tell, Lewis took a call from someone who disagreed with him. And therefore, the smug ignorance of liberals was exposed. Do these people realise it's optional to listen to the... Why would you tune in to somebody who you consider to be the epitome of smug ignorance? What an amazing thing to do with your weekend, Brendan O'Neill. Do you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to listen to a radio presenter who I know that I already despise. Or that I already find... In fact, I'm going to listen for hours and hours and hours and hours in the hope that there's one call to that radio presenter that I would then be able to use to pretend that the whole show is So what I'm going to do, I'm going to listen all year to 3 hours every Sunday morning of Lewis Goodall in the hope that one day there might be a brief phone call from one person that I can pretend undermined Lewis's presenting abilities, and then I can phone up the comment desk at the Daily Telegraph, the kings or queens of unhinged headlines, and although I'm probably not important enough to get my name in print, I bet I can get £10 for writing an article for their website about how, hang on, Lewis Goodall's car crash phone-in exposes the smug ignorance of liberals. How much do you think you get from the Telegraph website for an article like that? I might do a crowdfund-me for this fella. Bless him. Anyway, there you go. Today's the first missing word round of 2026. In fact, we should have a special category for headlines that contain the names of LBC presenters. Something rather special and warming about that. But there you go. That's what people with fulfilling and varied existences and rich inner lives do. They listen to radio hosts that they hate in the hope that they might occasionally do something that they can pretend was really embarrassing. And then sell it to the Daily Telegraph website for, I don't know, about probably 25, 50 quid maybe. Hey, look, any port in a storm, there's a cost of living crisis going on, largely as a consequence or partly as a consequence of the Brexit that these clowns encouraged you to vote for. I presume, I haven't checked whether this character was pro or anti-Brexit, but I think you could take a fair guess, can't you? And back to Keir Starmer and the European Union. Jaron is in Harrow. Jaron, what would you like to say?
Hi, thank you for having me on. I would say that I think this is definitely the best time for Keir Starmer to start mending his ties with Europe. I think we are last in a race of rapid economic development. I think the United States are rapidly progressing, and I think the deals that they are going to get in place and have got in place, if it's the minerals deal in Ukraine, or if they happen to go for Greenland, and if they happen to access the oil reserves in Venezuela, I think will leave behind the UK. And then if you look at the East, if you look at China and India and their oil integration and the increased economic ties that they're having because of Trump's outlandish comments, I think all these ties around the world are being built and the UK is getting left behind as to Europe.
This is brilliant, actually, because this is the final piece of the jigsaw that we were assembling in the first couple of hours of the programme. Under this world of fortresses that Trump dreams of joining alongside Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, Europe is, in the same way that London is the grit in the oyster of racism, because being such a massively successful multicultural melting pot, it makes a lie of all the nonsense they speak about integration and immigration. So it is with the European Union being a fine example of pooled sovereignty, supranational economic policy, sharing, equality, egalitarianism. So you have to hate the European Union in order to pursue the positions that Trump and Putin pursue. Therefore, the United Kingdom is in an even weaker position in a world where Trump is president than it was in a world where Barack Obama was president. So Brexit has actually got worse as a consequence of Trump being in power.
Yes, but the United Kingdom has fallen disadvantaged to that.
That's what I mean by Brexit. Yeah, sorry. Exactly. Brexit Britain has become even weaker than it would have been if America hadn't gone mad.
Yes, and I think it's only going to get worse, and I think we have to take Trump seriously and the remarks they have seriously.
Oh, we do.
And I think the only way to combat that is through rejoining the EU. I think the UK has a very unique economy compared to other European countries, even the ones who aren't in the EU, and joining that trade bloc again is the only way to combat the growing American empire.
Do we know whether or not... Or do you think it matters that there may not be, Kieran's characteristically brilliant contribution notwithstanding, do we know whether it matters that there may not be a lot of substance to what Starmer is doing? You, I sense, see it as a move in the right direction. You know what the destination is, and it doesn't matter how far in that direction he is going, because at least the direction of movement is clear.
Yes, well, he's doing it cleverly. He's not being as abrupt as to say we are explicitly joining the EU. He's doing it in a more gradual sense. But I think if you look at the whole world around us, everyone who's, especially America with Venezuela, with possibly Greenland, with Ukraine, it's going to leave us behind. So the best time to start is now, because in 2 years' time, 3 years, 5 years' time, it will be way too late.
I hear you. And I mean, I don't disagree with a single thing you say. The timescale is debatable, more about what we talked about in the first 2 hours of the programme, but the necessity of some sort of hardening of resolve and closer ties should be clear. Militarily, clearer than ever. Economically, it's going to get clearer every year. Thank you, Jared. Let's go to Manchester. Boots is there. Are you on the ground?
Yeah, hi. I really like this idea of, like, when is the best time, because it's really, really hard to say.
Yes.
The time and the place.
Yes, it is.
I think personally it's mostly just down to once we can get the individual to admit that maybe Brexit wasn't a great idea, because you said it yourself, I think. Some people are saying that
nobody really celebrates it. The only people who still defend it are the people who claim that there is a good Brexit. It just goes to a different school. I mean, it is achievable. It just hasn't happened yet. And it's definitely not the fault of the people who said it was going to be brilliant that it's turned out not to be brilliant.
Yeah, but even then, we need to go into a discussion with them about why maybe it wasn't what it kind of was said to be, and then get them on side before we start this whole process of reintegration.
I think you and the last caller are both thinking that he's talking about rejoining or reintegrating. He's not. He's
not necessarily reintegration. Yeah.
No, but just moving a little bit closer. For example, there is now more red tape for people doing business with continental Europe than there was before. And people were promised, everybody was promised, whether they cared about it or not, that there would be less red tape. So that is a blatant and obvious failure. So to simply say we're going to undo that failure and go back to where we were before, I don't think that's a betrayal of anybody.
No. And I wouldn't say it would be in any way. But I think if this process is going to work completely successfully...
That's the problem. You need consensus. You need consensus. And there ain't ever going to be consensus as long as you have liars, I guess triumphing. You missed my joke at the beginning of this call.
I heard it then, if you could repeat that.
No, I will do, because that's how I roll as a dad. I tell my joke several times until I get the laughter that I deserve. So your name, although it's spelled differently, your name is pronounced Boots.
Yeah. No, it's no S, just one.
Oh, just Boot?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh, it doesn't really work then.
That's all right. You can repeat it anyway.
Well, because you're familiar with Donald Trump's rhetoric this week being all about getting whether or not they're going to put boots on the ground in Venezuela or in Greenland. So you came on the line from Manchester, and I simply said, "Are you Boots is in Manchester? Are you on the ground?" That's some of my best work, Boots. Come on. God, jeez. Everyone's a critic. Sheila Fogarty's in the house. That's it from me for today. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player. There's some cracking jokes in the show this week. Or on the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio maybe that joke worked better the first time round. You can rewind now and check. And you can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4:00, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Please stop, I'm coming out in a rush.
I'm here all week. I am here all week.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. See you tomorrow. At 3 today, new road safety laws focus on older drivers and alcohol, of course. Overdue or over the top? We'll talk about it at 3. At 2, the chef, Tom Kerridge, tells LBC it's crunch time for the hospitality sector. But we start where you left off on... Well, no, you left off on Brexit. We start with Greenland. Stephen Miller, the White House Chief of Staff, says of Greenland, it's ours if we say it is. US interests are the free world's interests, and if that means Greenland becomes Trump land, so be it. How a hot Latin American country and a cold European island tell us, I think, what's coming, a new world order. What will it end, and what will it start, and will NATO survive it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC Keir Starmer looks weak in response to Donald Trump's threats to annex Greenland. European leaders have rallied behind the Danish territory, saying it must determine its own future. The US president has repeatedly suggested he could take over the semi-autonomous island on national security grounds. Ms. Badenoch says Keir Starmer must show strength on the issue.
The Prime Minister should not be America's poodle. They are a strategic ally. We should work closely with them, but we should also be robust when they're saying things that we know are wrong. The US should not be talking about Greenland in the way that we heard. I'm completely in disagreement with what was said about the US taking over Greenland.
The mayor of Crans-Montana says inspections will be carried out on 128 local venues after a fire at a bar on New Year's Day. Swiss authorities have revealed that it hadn't had any safety checks for 5 years. 40 people died in the fire less than 2 hours after midnight. Volodymyr Zelensky has arrived for talks in Paris aimed at ending the war in Ukraine. France is hosting leaders from 30 nations, including Keir Starmer and a delegation from the US. The health secretary has rubbish claims he's being lobbied to mount a leadership challenge against the prime minister. Some Scottish Labour MPs are reportedly privately calling for Wes Streeting to stand against Keir Starmer before May. It's claimed they're concerned that if Keir isn't replaced, the party will suffer badly in the Holyrood election. But speaking to LBC, Wes Streeting said the reports have no substance.
I've certainly had my marching orders from the leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Anas Sarwar. He has told me to keep cutting NHS waiting lists in England because he wishes that there was an effective Labour government doing the same in Scotland. That's why we need change and a new direction with Anas Sarwar and Jackie Bailey and the Scottish Labour Party. And we are all putting our shoulders to the wheel to make sure we get a Scottish Labour government.
And Chelsea have confirmed the appointment of Liam Rossini as their new head coach on a 6-year contract. He replaces Enzo Maresca, who stepped down on New Year's Day. Rossini, who leaves French club Strasbourg, joins Chelsea, who are fifth in the Premier League. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 82 points at 10,086. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, bright in southern England this afternoon, cloudy elsewhere with patches of rain and snow, heavy snow showers in some parts of northern Scotland, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Stephen Miller, the White House Chief of Staff, it might not be a name you're immediately familiar with, but he was saying some startling things overnight in an interview. He is the White House Deputy, I should say, Chief of Staff for Policy, Stephen Miller. And he defended President Donald Trump's bullish attitude, to say the least, on acquiring Greenland. If it's ours, it's ours, was essentially the messaging, arguing that it is in the best interests of all of us, the entire NATO alliance.
Greenland has a population of 30,000 people, Jake. The real question is, by what right does Denmark assert control over Greenland? What is the basis of their territorial claim? What is their basis of having Greenland as a colony of Denmark? The United States is the power of NATO. For the United States to secure the Arctic region, to protect and defend NATO and NATO interests, obviously Greenland should be part of the United States. And so that's a conversation that we're going to have as a country. That's a process we're going to have as a community of nations.
So you can't take it off the table that the U.S. would use military force to seize Greenland. You can't take it off the table.
Jake, I understand you're trying very hard to, which again, is your job. I respect it. It's great to get exactly the headline, right, that catchy headline.
I'm trying to get an answer to
the
question.
That says Miller refuses to rule out the United States should have Greenland as part of the United States. There's no need to even think or talk about this in the context that you're asking of a military operation. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland.
There's so much in what he just said there, and we'll talk more about it in a minute. But the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has been speaking to LBC's Natasha Clark, reacting to events of the last 3 days and specifically to Keir Starmer's position on them.
The Prime Minister should not be America's poodle. They are a strategic ally. We should work closely with them, but we should also be robust when they're saying things that we know are wrong. The US should not be talking about Greenland in the way that we heard. I'm completely in disagreement with what was said about the US taking over Greenland. However, what we've seen in Venezuela is different. We saw a gangster regime that was oppressing its people, having its leader removed. I think morally that is the right thing to do. Let's see how that situation unfolds. But what I really want to see from Keir Starmer is some strength. He just looks weak. He looks like he doesn't know what's going on. President Trump hasn't called him.
I'm not sure anybody knows fully what's going on. The health secretary was treating till Nick Ferrari at breakfast this morning on LBC that an invasion in Greenland of whatever kind would undermine NATO, the military alliance.
Well, the Prime Minister has been robust and unequivocal about where we stand on this. Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark. That's their choice. That's their self-determination. And I've heard what President Trump has said overnight. Greenland is playing its part in the NATO alliance. They are a critical part of this country's national security and our collective security through NATO. And they play that part effectively as a member of NATO, as being part of the Kingdom of Denmark.
It would be an attack on all of NATO, wouldn't it? An attack on one is an attack on all.
Look, I think we've heard from the Danish government that this would undermine the NATO alliance at a time when we need to be standing together. That's the Prime Minister's view.
Well, I'm joined by Malcolm Rifkin, former Foreign Secretary, former Defence Secretary as well, and we'll hear from a former retired journalist in Greenland in a moment as well. So Malcolm Rifkin, first of all, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
On the question of Stephen Miller's comments there at the very top of the programme, where he talked about who says Greenland belongs to the Kingdom of Denmark, who says it can't be the United States? I mean, it is legally part of the Kingdom of Denmark, and it was made so back in 2009, Self-Government Act. But he seems to be saying we're bigger, we're stronger. If we say it's ours, it's ours. What does that make? What lead you to think?
I can't think of any more irresponsible remarks than the kind of comments that Stephen Miller has just been making. First of all, Greenland has been part of Denmark for hundreds of years. The fact that it's not geographically linked to it is rather like saying Puerto Rico should not be governed by the United States because it's an island in the Caribbean. That is complete rubbish. Now, when Miller says, and Donald Trump say, Greenland is of importance to the preventing any aggression by Russia, that, he's not talking about aggression.